host Harrison Smith, coming to you live, as always, from the InfoWars studios here in Austin, Texas. Very, very big Wednesday show we have for you today. We'll be joined by Naomi Zeit. Naomi Zeit. It's a German last name. She is the first German to request asylum into America. She's requesting asylum from America to escape her tyrannical German government. So very excited to talk to her. We'll also be joined by Ian Wendt, and he's been one of the main people on X covering the updates of the Charlie Kirk assassination. We have a lot of Charlie Kirk assassination news to get into today, as well as, of course, Arctic Frost and the mass surveillance of conservatives and just the absolute tyranny that the Democrats try to make us suffer under. We have a lot of videos and just a ton of stuff to talk about. Let's get into it. Here it is, your Daily Dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Wednesday, the 29th of October, 2025. Hurricane Melissa has screamed through Jamaica, leaving at least 30 dead as the storm heads towards the Bahamas. Cuba suffered significant damage, as well as Jamaica, and 25 people have died in Haiti after a river flooded by Melissa. Absolutely catastrophic storm there in the Caribbean. We pray for all the people affected, and it's going to be a hard time rebuilding from that. But of course, after a September in which there wasn't a single hurricane, that of course had nothing to do with climate change and absolutely had nothing to do with government control of the weather. But now this hurricane obviously is climate change's fault, and you all have to stop eating meat. Meanwhile, London police demand citizens stop sharing video of Afghan migrants stabbing dog-walking man to death. An illegal migrant from Afghanistan was arrested following a bloody stabbing rampage that left one man dead and two more people seriously injured in London this week. The horrific attack unfolded just before 5 p.m. on Monday in the town of Uxbridge. A local resident who was walking his dog in the Midhurst Garden neighborhood was ambushed by the knife-wielding suspect, who can be seen stabbing the 49-year-old man at least 15 times in a video circulating on social media. We'll show you that video later, but it's illegal to post in Britain. You cannot post this video in Britain because they don't want you aware of the catastrophically negative consequences of their policies, or else you might vote against their policies. So they're going to bring the policies in that leave families wrecked in absolutely inexplicable and incomprehensible horror and grief when your dad goes out and going out to walk the dog, honey, be right back. And he just never comes. He never comes home ever again. And that family will never recover from that attack. So they do this to you and then they silence you from talking about it so that they can keep doing it more. That's why. Meanwhile, President Trump has called Jack Smith a, quote, deranged criminal, says Democrat thugs should be in prison for illegally surveilling Alex Jones and GOP politicians. He posted this on Truth Social. We'll get back into that a little bit later. This, of course, having to do with the new revelations about Operation Arctic Frost, the completely illegal surveillance campaign against Republicans of all stripes and levels. Meanwhile, Israeli strikes in Gaza kill at least 104 people, including children, hospitals say. And now the ceasefire is back on. Don't worry, it's back on. They took a brief break to slaughter a couple dozen children, but now it's a ceasefire again. So everybody calm down. So it's about as good of a ceasefire as you can hope to get with Israel as one of the belligerents in the contest. But we'll get back into that. Basically, they've killed an average of something like 15 to 20 people a day since the ceasefire went into effect. So I guess you can call that a ceasefire. Finally, we have this. Cash Patel shuts down Charlie Kirk foreign intelligence probe, an explosive feud with Trump's counterterror chief. So apparently Joe Kent, who, you know, friend of the show, he is working under Tulsi Gabbard. He was looking into foreign connections into the murder of Charlie Kirk, and Cash Patel apparently had a shouting match with him in the White House. We'll bring you the details of that, but the reason given is not sufficient for me. They claim it's to stop the defense from getting, you know, from having an argument that other people were involved and doesn't pass the smell test. Doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense, which means there's probably another reason. Why would the FBI want to shut down a probe into foreign involvement in the Charlie Kirk murder? I wonder why they would want to do something like that. What could that be about?
Alex Jones, patriot. A man they tried to silence. They came for his voice. his platform, his life. But they can't stop him. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's most unstoppable force. Alex Jones will be that man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger. Faster. Louder.
Go to alexjonesapp.com, the number one news app in the world.
Yes!
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this live edition of The War Room for Wednesday, the 29th of October, 2025. I got so many videos to get to. It's just outrageous. And we got a lot of conflicts to cover, I guess is what you could say. We've got the radical Democrats versus the Chuck Schumer Democrats. We've got the radical right-wingers versus the Zionist right-wingers. We've got Israel versus everybody else in the world. We've got the tyrant, old-school Obama-era Democrats and stay-behind network operators committing treason, and the still-remaining deep state subversives in the FBI. We got a lot of subversion going on, basically, from every different angle. And I don't even know where to start. I genuinely don't even know where to start. Let's start with clip 23. This is the last video I brought in. It'll be the first one we start with because it's rattling around in my brain. It's rattling around. And this is Barack Obama. He was the president one time. And he's got some interesting ideas. He's got some very interesting ideas about, the First Amendment and how we should proceed into the future with free speech as a barrier to progress and what we can do about that. Let's go to clip 23 here. Barack Obama saying the quiet part out loud here, trying and, in my opinion, failing to use that classic Obama charm to make what is clearly a tyrannical and just outrageously anti-American stance sound reasonable. He fails. He fails in this because what he's suggesting is not reasonable, is not even something that should be considered by any American. Let's go to Obama, let him explain it, and then I'll explain why it's retarded. Here's Obama.
Part of what we're going to have to do is to start experimenting with new forms of journalism and how do we use social media.
Let's go and pause it. Let's go and pause it real quick. We have to experiment with new forms of journalism and social media. Well, we're doing that. No, we're actually having some amazing results with our experimentation. Actually, real people, real human beings, not avatars of a technocratic global slave system. Us real human beings have been conducting all sorts of experimentation. We're actually really fine-tuning our experimentation at this point. We have been experimenting with journalism and social media. That's what you want to stop. That's what they want to stop in its tracks. Just to clarify, when he's putting this in terms of we have to experiment with new forms of journalism and social media, actually there are new forms of journalism. There are new forms of social media. We dominate on all of them. That's what they're trying to stop. They're trying to forcibly drag us back to a world where they got to control everything that we said. And they're framing this attempt to reclaim monopolistic control of the minds of America by framing it as some experimentation, a new forms of journalism, social media. Sorry, let's go back. This is the experiment. You're being experimented on right now by me, live streaming to tens of thousands of people on X, reaching more people than CNN does with cable. So this is the experiment. It's going wonderfully. Thank you for asking. What contributions do you have, Mr. President?
Reaffirm facts, separate facts from opinion. We want diversity of opinion. We don't want diversity of facts. That, I think, is one of the big tasks of social media. By the way, it will require some government, I believe, regulatory constraints around some of these business models in a way that's consistent with the First Amendment, but that also says, look, there is a difference between these platforms letting all voices be heard versus a business model that elevates the most hateful voices or the most polarizing voices or the most dangerous in the sense of inciting violence voices. And I think is going to be a big challenge for all of us that we're going to have to undertake.
Oh, is it? Is that going to be a big challenge for all of us that we all have to undertake? So again, the way he words things sounds sophisticated. It's not. It's absolutely not. All he's saying there is, yeah, government's going to have to control speech. You can boil that whole diatribe down into one phrase, government control of speech. That's all he's saying. But he's phrasing it as, you know, we'll have to have some government oversight, some government restrictions on these business models. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So you want to censor Americans. That's what you're saying. You want to censor Americans. You're saying we want to have a diversity of opinions, but not a diversity of facts. Again, I'm not going to insult you by actually trying to contend with the words that he said. They don't actually mean anything is the issue. They don't actually mean anything at all. All he's saying is government control of speech, and that's it. And that's that. I mean, we could argue about, like, well, certain facts are offensive to some people, and if you spread certain facts, they'll be considered hate speech. While on the other hand, you don't want a diversity of opinions. It's mostly opinions that you have a problem with and interject with. But I really love his contribution to the First Amendment. It's, you know, it's eloquent. It's thoughtful. Thomas Jefferson could take some notes. Obviously, Thomas Jefferson, big dummy compared to Obama. I think we need to add Obama's amendment to the amendment. And yeah, I think we'll all be satisfied with what the First Amendment looks like at that point. I have the First Amendment here. So as it stands now, it's the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights. Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the governance for a redress of grievances. And we'll add on to that. Look, there's a difference between these platforms letting all voices be heard and a business model that elevates the most offensive voices. I think that's, it's concise. It's perfect, right? Yes, we don't want to have laws respecting free speech or the press or religion, but do we though? But we actually need it kind of because now it's the year 2025. So naturally that means by virtue of the year it is, now it's time to, you know, throw all of our old ideas of morals and responsibility and citizenship just right out the window because Barack Obama's team is losing now. So obviously the First Amendment is broken and needs to be amended to say, quote, look, there's a difference between these platforms letting all voices be heard and a business model that elevates the most offensive voices. So, you know, obviously a very well thought out and well considered. You're not going to censor us. All of this is facetious. All of this is to say they really are desperately trying to find just the right combination of words to make censorship not seem like censorship. They're testing all of these different combinations of phrases to try to tell you that your free speech is dangerous and you have to let daddy government come in and dictate what is and is not fact, what opinions are valid and what are offensive, okay? By which, you know, but then the way Barack Obama says it is we have to experiment. We have to do some experimenting, some new forms of journalism. No, we are experimenting with new forms of journalism and we're kicking your butt on every front. And that's just how it goes. Should we listen to some more Democrats? There's one thing that I've noticed. And Democrats are, you know, for the most part, theater kids. Theater kids is the way to think about it. They have no experience. They have no actual passion, really. They're very good at seeming sincere about things, but not actually meaning it. And you have to look at their hands. You have to watch their hands. We're going to be studying the hand movements of Democrats today. Now, obviously, one of the biggest stories in the country still is this government shutdown. We can get into exactly what's behind the shutdown and everything. But the Democrats are not weathering this well. They're not handling this in the way that they should. And other Democrats are trying to tell that to them and are getting shut down at the Democrat panicking. Let's go to clip 18 here. This is Jake Tapper asking a Democrat if this is really the best idea. And then, boy, she goes into a diatribe that I think a deaf person could understand. Watch your hands here. You have to understand. You have to watch your hands while she's doing this. You'll get what I mean when you watch it. See, when I talk, I'm usually clasping my hands right here. Maybe I need to do a little bit more. Maybe I need to do a little bit more Hitler style kind of, you know, oration stuff. Because clearly it's an effective method. Here's Jake Tapper asking the Democrat a very simple question and getting absolute gibberish and a bunch of hand motions in return. Let's watch.
Should the Democratic senators from New Mexico, your home state, vote to open the government so that these SNAP funds are not at risk?
Let me be clear. The administration is choosing to starve American children with money that they already have appropriated.
This is a choice by the White House.
This is also a choice by Senate Democrats to not vote to open the government.
Yes, it is. I understand why they're doing it. They're doing it because they want Medicaid funds restored. They're doing it because they want Obamacare premiums to be extended past the end of the year. I understand the reasoning.
Let me just be clear. The money for contingency plans is sitting there. That is why the states are suing. The White House is withholding funds from
children
to
3 weeks worth of SNAP funds. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it may not be a big deal to you, but let me tell you, for grandparents that literally are feeding their children.
My point is that it's a short-term solution.
In those accounts, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, people need to be able to feed their families, and Saturday is when those funds run out.
If you feel so strongly, Congresswoman, why not ask the Senate Democrats from New Mexico to vote to open the government so that the SNAP funds...
Sir, I am here in the House of Representatives. It is shut down. I am fighting to get the government reopened. I am fighting to get funding put back into SNAP that is already existent, and I am fighting for the American people. I am here. But show me a single Republican that is here. Not a single one is here to make sure that Americans are fed on Saturday. That is why I am here.
Democratic Congresswoman Melanie Stansberry from New Mexico.
Amazing stuff. CNN host clashes with Democrat lawmaker over government shutdown SNAP funds. Now, the reason I'm hyper-focusing on the hand motions here is because this is a particular hand motion. It's risen to prominence thanks to TikTok, and I want to explain the physiology behind it. In fact, I should have brought in the person that made a great video about this named HoMath, H-O-E underscore math. It's the henpeck. That's what that is. That's what this motion is. And you can compare – there's some other sort of iconic hand motions, right? Typically an open palm is inviting. It's peaceable. The fist is, you know, warlike. Bill Clinton had this interesting fist where he put his thumb onto, you know, this motion. And it's not quite as strong because you got the thumb up instead of the fist motion. It's a little, and these things, you know, subtly, they tell people how they're supposed to react, how you're feeling. Now, this hand motion is a new one. It's from TikTok mostly. It's the henpeck. It's not powerful. It's not open and inviting. It's condemning, and it's sort of nagging, but they sort of punctuate every word like a hen pecking at you. So that's what that motion is. Very popular with young women. Young men don't do it as much, but that's what she was explaining there. You know, when she's pecking at you or, you know, nagging you, telling you why you need to do what she says, but she doesn't have any power to do it. So she's just pecking at you, pecking. That's what that hand motion is. This is a study here. It's not the only video I have. Let's go down to clip 30. This is Chuck Schumer blaming Trump for the shutdown. Now, I don't really want to explain what this hand motion is, okay? But I'm just saying we're going on one end of the spectrum to the other. On one end, we have that young woman maybe a little bit too dramatic with her flourishes. And I'm here in the Capitol. Where are the Republicans? I don't see them. Chuck Schumer goes the other direction. I think maybe he could do a little bit more. He could do a little bit more hand movements. Okay, let's go to Chuck Schumer blaming Trump for the shutdowns. Let's watch.
On Saturday, for the first time in American history, a vicious, heartless president is cutting off food stamps to hungry children, elderly who can't afford enough food to feed themselves, veterans who are down on their luck, all because he wants to use them as hostages so that Democrats will stop fighting for people's health care. We can do both, provide better health care and provide SNAP benefits to the tens of millions who need it. This president is a fucking liar. He says there's no money to provide food stamps.
Oh, my God. All right. Chuck Schumer's dropping four-letter words here because he thinks it makes him more human. See, that's the problem. Remember we showed you. I should have it, like, stapled to the wall somewhere around here. The Democrats paid some PR firm, like, tens of millions of dollars to tell them how to seem more human, how to seem more relatable and not, like, robotic lizards. And they were told you should curse more. They're told, you know, cursing actually makes people more trustworthy. But of course, that's in a situation where cursing is rare or it's in like casual conversation. And you can seem a little bit more, you know, sincere when you curse because it means you're not, you know, filtering yourself. The Democrats, again, because they're not human, because they're like robot lizards, they're just like, oh, curse more? Okay. And so they just like start cursing like sailors all the time. Like they have no concept of just like, hey, just be yourself. They're like, what? No, tell me what to do. So Chuck Schumer's been told to curse, and now he's cursing up like a sailor. But he had a very interesting – this is the tantrum. That's what this movement is. It is the toddler tantrum, and it's what children do when you tell them they can't get their way. It's another weak movement. It's not a strong movement. It's a weak, childish, complaining tantrum movement. When you tell them they can't have ice cream, this is Chuck Schumer as a baby being told he can't have, I don't know, what do lizards eat? He can't eat the goose eggs. He's not being allowed to unhinge his jaw and swallow the goose egg whole, and he's angry that he can't do that. So I'm telling you, you can listen to their words, but it's the body language says 90% of communication. And what the Democrats are saying is, do what I say, I'm going to henpeck you to death, and give me what I want right now. These are the hand movements that we're paying attention to. Okay? Now, if you want to know what the shutdown's actually like, if you don't want to hear from the henpeckers or the, baby, the big old baby, which again, I mean, I just can't think of Chuck Schumer without seeing him leering over the raw hamburgers. Just cooking some burgers with my family, just like we always do. It's just like, dude. So, like, especially when he's talking about food, you know, it's like, do you even eat food? Do you even know what that? Can you even relate to Americans that consume food for nutrients? I'm not sure. He's like, people all over the country, they're not getting their fresh children's blood delivered like a milkman in the 50s, like I do. People all over America, they don't have the raw meat patties to shove in their gullet when it's feeding time. He's a lizard. The joke is he's a lizard. Let's go to this new video. This young man explains what's really going on with the shutdown and why it is just entirely the Democrats' fault. And this is actually the explanation, not the ridiculous nonsense from the panicking lizard Democrats. Let's watch.
Why is the government shutdown not a both sides issue? Why are the Democrats to blame? Well, Democrats are using a short-term spending bill to push long-term policy changes that don't belong there. They've said it outright. They will not vote to reopen the government unless their healthcare demands are met. What they're demanding is an extension of temporary COVID-era spending that artificially lowered healthcare costs under the Affordable Care Act. Those measures were not part of the ACA itself. They were emergency subsidies created under the American Rescue Plan Act and later extended through 2025 by the Inflation Reduction Act. When that spending expires, the ACA simply returns to its original pricing framework. Not a spike, not a crisis, just a return to baseline after years of inflated relief funding. And yes, people will feel it. Premiums will adjust. But that's not because Republicans raised prices. It's because Democrats are refusing to admit that these subsidies were temporary. They're using the fear of higher costs, a perception they created, to justify holding the government hostage. And because Republicans are in full power, this is great leverage to make it look like it's their fault. Now, here's where it gets even more reckless. They're not just trying to extend the pandemic subsidies. They're also trying to reopen and revise parts of the One Big Beautiful Bill, a massive spending law that's already been passed and signed into law earlier this year. The One Big Beautiful Bill reshaped portions of Medicaid and other federal programs, and Democrats now want to undo sections of it by tying their changes to the current funding debate. Instead of debating revisions through normal legislative order, they're trying to squeeze them into the continuing resolution, which is a short-term bill that's supposed to do one thing, keep basic government operations funded. And that's the abuse here. A continuing resolution isn't a policy-making tool per se. It's a bridge, a stopgap to prevent a shutdown while Congress negotiates the full budget, using it to rewrite sections of existing law, whether that's the pandemic relief measures or the One Big Beautiful Bill, is procedural malpractice. Again, not the right place, not the right time. Look, the Democrats are desperate. They are held captive by the socialist wing of their party, the Democratic Socialists of America. And they know the only thing they have to appease that base is empty rhetoric about Trump, MAGA, and the Republicans. So it's not really about healthcare, in my view. It's about control, about rewriting existing law through the wrong channel and using a temporary funding bill to do it. And as more people understand that, it'll be hard to unsee the man behind the curtain.
Very, very brilliant breakdown by somebody on TikTok named Anthony Rispo, Anthony R-I-S-P-O. Those are the types of alternative facts that Obama finds so objectionable out there in the media world today. You shouldn't be allowed to say that type of thing. We're going to need government regulation of, you know, talking about them and their programs and what the effect is. Of course, it's acknowledged now by anybody. I've got so many videos here. We can at least go to clip six here. This is an Iraqi refugee talking about how he survives on SNAP benefits and welfare, even though we keep being told that that's not the case. Let's watch.
Without the government support, I cannot stay maybe month or 2 months.
Pima County Chairman Rex Scott told News 4 Tucson he's deeply concerned
about
the
impact
on local.
See you later then. When did the immigration law change to allow indigents into this country? Like, it was always a law that you had to be self-sufficient. You couldn't become a ward of the state, but we've welcomed millions. And yes, we've welcomed millions, as this post by C3 on X post. Why would the SNAP program almost double starting when O'Biden was president? Well, because America was flooded with illegals and anchor babies were born. Then the entire household is eligible for SNAP. Americans pay for it all. That's the scam. And you can see the SNAP usage rising sharply right around 2019. Part of that was COVID, but actually if you go to the full chart on my screen, you can see that it doesn't ever go down. It goes up during COVID, then it stays up, and it rises in direct proportion and direct association with illegal crossings. Well, what do you know? So they let in tens of millions of people, put them all on welfare, and now if the government shut down because Americans don't want to pay for it.
What out there could have an effect like methylene blue and synergistically work with it to boost it and supercharge it? So I got with Bigley. They've been making supplements long before I got with them. And I got with Chase, who's really smart. And I said, I want you to go to a couple of different formulators and ask them what you think's the best. Announcing, ladies and gentlemen, Ultra Methylene Red. Now, this bottle is three times the size of an Ultra Methylene Blue bottle because it's to have the formula, you got to have a lot more stuff in it. But this, ladies and gentlemen, is amazing. And it just came in yesterday. I took it with the Methylene Blue. Incredible workout today. Clarity, focus, it is so amazing. And it works with Methylene Blue. And it works without it. And unlike Ultra Methylene Blue that you can't take if you're on a serotonin reuptake inhibitor or certain other medications, nothing in this has any of those counterindications, but still consult your physician. But when you take it with ultramethylene blue, it just does synergistic things that are amazing. I mean, I had this idea like a month into methylene blue exploding. I said, we got to come out with something that's complementary or even better. This is the research from that. You can buy three bottles, get 25% off. Buy two bottles, get 20% off. Buy one bottle, get 15% off. And when you subscribe and you cancel any time, it locks it in at 50% off at theyellowstonestore.com. So here it is, ladies and gentlemen, and it's available right now exclusively, limited first run. A little more comes in a month, but they got a limited run. Chase, tell us about what is in Ultra Methylene Red.
Well, I got to tell you, I've never been prouder of a product launch than I am of this. I really had a heavy hand in this.
So we are officially the first company through the Alex Jones Store that's ever even invented or launched something like this called Methylene Red. So I'm incredibly proud. And so we put this together as both a methylene blue super enhancer, especially with the cognitive focus benefits, the mitochondria empowerment, and the brain dropping off an extra electron for the brain cells. But it's also an incredible standalone product. I mean, just to give you an example, Alex, one of our best sellers when we were still operating the InfoWars store was Ultra 12. And this has everything that Ultra 12 had in it. 206,000% your daily value of vitamin B12 through methylcobalamin. So this is all backed by studies, by the way. We looked very carefully into this. The P5P form of B6 that cranks out GABA, serotonin, and dopamine like a neurotransmitter factory. It's got 5,000 micrograms of neurological B12 that regrows damaged nerve cells and shields your memory from the brain drain agenda from the globalists. It's got 5 grams of TMG, a methyl donor juggernaut that recycles homocysteine, fueling DNA repair and detoxifying your brain. It's got acetyl L-carnitine in it. It's a brain-penetrating carnitine that floods your mitochondria with ATP, which is basically energy and reverses cognitive aging. It's got uridine monophosphate in it, the synaptogenesis rocket fuel that grows new dendritic spines and locks in razor-sharp memory, and just so much more. It's even got the CoQ10 in it, of course, which is huge, huge product that we've sold in different forms in the past. But this is the most impressive compilation of ingredients that I've ever seen in a supplement. I'm very proud that we launched it. I'm very proud that it's our second tincture on the market. And when I'm looking through these studies, I mean, here are the benefits that are listed: migraine prevention, cardiovascular help, antioxidant, cellular protection. We've got neurotransmitter synthesis and mood helps people with depression, according to these studies I've looked at here. Even energy and fatigue reduction, more cardio production, cognitive support, mood cognition, endothelial function. I mean, it goes on and on. Nerve regeneration, cognitive and mood support.
So that's what you're getting with us, ultramethylene bread. Everything we sell is the most insanely powerful, best thing we can come up with, because this is what we take, and it's common sense to want to sell somebody something that really works. So that's why everybody just raves and raves and raves about the products at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the War Room. We got a lot of other news to talk about. You know, there's a weird thing going on in both of the parties. And it's sort of around the same topic, although not really. It manifests in different ways. How do I explain this? I want to talk at least a little bit about sort of the divide in the right wing and who's really causing it and what it really is all about. A similar divide is happening on the left wing, but there's a very, 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 very stark difference in sort of the extremes of either party. On the right wing, in fact, let me see if I have one of these tweets. I mean, there's like a million a day on my feed, even though I don't follow any of these people. All of their content gets shoved in my face. So many posts basically demonizing Tucker Carlson and calling him the worst person ever, and basically saying if we, you know, MAGA people go the Tucker Carlson route, it's over for us. This is from Stop Antisemitism on X. Tucker Carlson will be the demise of the Republican Party. This man must be ostracized from public forums. ostracized from public forums, insider circles, and every place in between. Otherwise, the GOP will morph into the radical abyss like the Democrats have after failing to rein in AOC, Tlaib, Omar, and their ilk. Tucker Carlson will be the demise of the Republican Party. Assuming this is from Stop Anti-Semitism, because of his anti-Semitism, of course, because of how anti-Semitic he is what they're saying. And that's obviously what the divide is over. But let me ask you, what has Tucker Carlson ever said that's even offensive, let alone a call to violence, anything that you could even frame as anti-Semitic without the most ridiculous reaching, bone-breaking levels of reaching being done to try to classify Tucker Carlson as anti-Semitic? And that's sort of the point. I mean, they could not have picked a worse avatar for their outrage. Tucker Carlson, a man who goes out of his way to, every time he ever mentions anything about Israel or Jews, to remind everybody how he's not anti-Semitic, to remind everybody how he genuinely loves Israel with all of his heart. Not good enough, because he questions them, because he questions some of the control they have over America, because he says it looks like Epstein was a Mossad agent and everybody's afraid of talking about it, and it looks like Israel's trying to get us to fight their wars overseas, which they obviously are. See, they're mad at Tucker Carlson for having the most milquetoast. Normal, this is how the Holocaust started. Tucker Carlson. Okay, so what I want to explain here is there's no big divide being driven by anti-Semites. There's no big hateful contingent of the right that is demanding that everybody, you know, denounce people that like Israel. There are very normal, patriotic Christian Americans like Tucker Carlson who have the most timid and respectful objections to the behavior of the nation state of Israel. And that alone is enough for the screeching choir of subversives to demand that Tucker Carlson, this unbelievably popular, unbelievably well-respected right-winger, be expelled from the party, and everybody who likes him or has anything to do with him likewise expelled from the party. Has he questioned the Holocaust? Has he called for just anything ever that's even remotely objectionable? And this is what I want to explain, because on the right, there is this fake divide. There's a fake divide that's being driven by the Israel First contingent, who insists that everybody has to be, you know, suicidally devoted to Israel. And if you're not, you're the bad guy and you'll be ousted until you, you know, apologize and go to the wall or whatever. On the Democrat side, on the other hand, the radical end on that spectrum, also anti-Israel, but they're insane. And they're vicious, and they are at this moment reveling in the idea that they get to call for violence against right-wingers and nothing happens to them. They're reveling in the idea that they're dragging the Democrat Party not away from Israel exclusively, but away from common sense and decency and humanitarianism, just fully pulling the left wing of this country towards just vicious genocidal hatred of their own people. It's crazy, but this is absolutely the case. So it's not the same. It's not exactly the same, is it? When on one hand, the radicals in the right-wing party are Nick Fuentes and Tucker Carlson, but Tucker Carlson's their real aim, and he's like the least offensive person of all time. On the left wing, the end of their spectrum is like Luigi Mangione and Tyler Robinson, or whoever killed Charlie Kirk. These are not the same conflicts going on. They might have shades of similarity, but they're actually completely different. And it's so much more intense on the right wing, or at least maybe I notice it so much more intense, and the division seems so much more angry, I guess, or you know, vicious, because Israel needs the right wing. They need the Republican Party. They've sort of given up on the left wing and decided that they have to put all their eggs in the right wing basket, and they're goal, again, is to expel anybody that questions that, even remotely. So it's not like you have a bunch of people on the right rising to prominence by, you know, calling for infatada or whatever that word is. Another word. You don't have a lot of that. You do on the left. Let's go to clip 10 here. And again, I'm going to have to take this down because I cannot get a video of a Democrat where they're not cursing like a sailor now. I mean, literally, it's very obnoxious. So we'll cut this off after a little bit. But here's Jennifer Welch threatening her own side, the Democrats, who aren't just obnoxiously extreme and offensive and people that don't want to dehumanize and kill right-wingers. I'm not exaggerating. And she's celebrating some random woman saying, "I'm glad Charlie Kirk died." And she's basically like, this is the future. The rest of Democrats need to get on board with killing your opponents for having the wrong ideas. This is the real divide. The real divide is between people who, as different as you are, I don't want to kill you. I don't want to see you suffer. I don't want your children to be raised without their father. Like, what is wrong with you people? The real divide is between people who are sincere and have a soul and might not have all of the answers, might be asking uncomfortable questions, but don't want to kill their enemies for having the wrong ideas, don't feel a seething, vicious resentment over something that's happening, you know, 30,000 miles away. And people who do, and people who do have that mindset. And that really is the divide. And it's sort of centered on Israel right now because you have on both sides of the aisle, the Randy Fines or the Mark Levins or the James Lindsays, who like just post images of Gaza as just a completely war-torn, desolate hellhole and smirk and smile and go, yeah, we kill people that we don't like. It's like, oh, the women and the children too. And they're like, yep. Yeah. Especially them. They're the easiest to kill. You know, it's like, you're not on my team. You're not on team humanity. You're on team vicious hate. I don't know what team you're on. You're on team tear everybody else down, and anybody who opposes you is a terrorist that deserves to die. Both sides of the aisle have these types of people in their orbit, and they're the ones causing the real division. Let's go to Jennifer Welch here, clip number 10. I'll pull us out.
Finally, if you think this Zoran thing is happening just in New York, and you think people are waking up only in New York City, you're mistaken. Look at this clip of a wine mom at the No Kings March. Play the clip.
Edward's name was?
Charlie Kirk, ma'am?
Yeah, him is horrible. Horrible.
Charlie Kirk is horrible?
Yes, I'm glad he's not here.
You're glad he's dead?
Yes.
Why would you say something like that, ma'am?
Because he was horrible on the campuses, the college campuses. Horrible person.
You know what? I do the exact same thing. Well, would you be glad if I would die?
Maybe. I'd have to think about it.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Your friend just said she'd be happy if I died.
So listen up, Democratic establishment. You can either jump on board with this shit, or we're coming after you in the same way that we come after MAGA.
All right, we can take you down. We can take you down. She starts cursing. You either get on board with, like, celebrating the death of an innocent man, or we're going to come after you in the same way that we're going to come after MAGA, that we come after MAGA. In other words, we're going to kill you. Like, that's who these this woman isn't considered a radical, you know, beyond the pale. Nobody will touch her with a 10-foot pole. She's less rejected by the Democrats than somebody like Tucker Carlson or Nick Fuentes is rejected by the mainstream Republicans. And if you think this is a winning strategy, you're delusional. You're delusional. And I'll explain that in just a second. But this really does – it's – people talk about it a lot that, you know, obviously Israel is this major divide in the right wing. It's a major divide in the left wing. It's causing all these problems. Everybody's talking about it constantly. It's infuriating and exhausting. And everybody gets that. But like, especially on the right, you have to understand how this is all unfolded. You have to understand that from the very beginning, Israel thought it would get certain things from Trump. Trump worked with them a lot, but didn't get them everything that they wanted. So the Israelis tried everything they could to replace his people who didn't want war with Iran with people who did want war with Iran. That's what the Signalgate scandal was about. That's what Mike Waltz communicating with Netanyahu in secret, you know, later being relieved of his duties over that. Also, the guy sending the signal chat to the editor of The Atlantic. All of that was a highly orchestrated PR campaign to oust Pete Hegseth because they saw him as a barrier to war with Iran. At that same time period, you had assistants or, you know, deputies of J.D. Vance and Pete Hegseth being forced out, folks like Dan Caldwell. So anybody that was effectively arguing against intervention in Iran, war in the Middle East, was being expelled. They're providing intelligence to Donald Trump that is inaccurate, according to Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard, the ODNI, the head of all American intelligence, says Iran is not anywhere near having a nuclear bomb, at least 2 years away. But Donald Trump is getting different intelligence that he believes more. So it's not American. One thing we know is it's not American. It's Israeli. So, okay, they're providing fake information to Trump. They're providing fake information to Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner to try to destroy the peace deals with Hamas. When we're negotiating with Hamas, they bomb the negotiators in Qatar. And then the Charlie Kirk thing happens. That's a big, you know, scandal around Israel as well. And it's around that movement that seems like everybody starts changing tactics. Seems like Trump starts putting his foot down, starts really pushing for the ceasefire in Gaza, which now is, you know, barely being held together, if you can even consider it that. But he starts really pushing for that. He comes out with the, you know, international peace board that will be over Gaza. He brings Netanyahu into the Oval Office, hands him a telephone and a script, and says, apologize to Qatar for what you did. And then he signs the protection order around Qatar as a clear signal to Israel, you're not doing that anymore. This is the main conflict. And the same time that the conflict is going on within the Trump administration, in the wider media sphere, they launch this full force Eighth Front operation against the American media, where they're buying TikTok, they're changing the algorithm on X, and they're paying, influencers $7,000 for positive posts. And again, a full push to try to reclaim some of the landscape that they've lost, as everybody has seen them being genocidal maniacs for the last 2 years or so. And the way this has come about, the way the media attacks are being wielded, it's not just about manipulating the algorithm. It's not just about buying TikTok and, you know, putting an IDF soldier as the head of censorship there. Those are very effective means, but they also launch the pressure campaigns to do things like destroy the Young Republicans in the whole, you know, leaked texts. I like Hitler speech, like we talked about that. And I was going, well, what was the source of this beef? Why did these guys, you know, one guy's leaking, the other guy's chat, it all has to do with some sort of power struggle. And I'm talking to a person from the Young Republicans going, what was this all about at the end of the day? And they're like, well, what do you think? What do you think it's about? The guy that leaked the stuff is in charge, and he was a major Zionist guy. And there was a non-Zionist contingent of Republicans that were trying to take over the leadership. And so now you've got the Young Republican institution across the country severely damaged. You had a lot of young people who, you know, are going to have a hard time getting jobs now because of this. It's done, you know, really serious. And it gave the left just infinite ammo to go after Trump and all of his supporters because of this. Like, it just, this did huge damage to the right. And it was entirely because the Zionists wanted to maintain control and wanted to use blackmail essentially to crush their opposition. Then you have this other guy. I'm blanking on his name right now, but the same thing happened to him. Text messages, group chat were leaked, and he was forced to withdraw his, you know, offer or his application to work in the Trump administration. So they've discovered basically, and this is why, you know, anti-Semitism as a concept is so important to them. Because they can frame these things as anti-Semitic and then get people fired or ousted. And remember, this goes all the way back to Matt Gaetz and, you know, not being allowed to be AG. Basically have this power struggle taking place in the Trump administration and the American media landscape that is very obvious if you look for it. But if you're not looking for it, they all look like separate instances. They all look like independent, separate things going on that don't have any relation to one another. But when you look at them in the context of the main divide of MAGA being the not even anti-Israel, but not pro-Israel side just wanting America, like the American first side, just wanting America to be the prime concern of the Trump administration. But they're not the ones causing the problem. The people causing the problem are the Zionists who are attacking them with everything they've got. Again, that's why Tucker Carlson is such a stupid target for them, because it's obvious this isn't about some outrageous anti-Semitism, because he's like the most philo-Semitic guy you can find. Megyn Kelly, not an anti-Semite. So these are the people they're targeting because they want no deviation, no questioning. They want full, total, like, limitless and objectionless control of the Republican Party. And that's what's causing all of this division, and that should be obvious. And again, it's not just that, you know, they'll use this and they go, so the way it goes with the young Republicans, sort of like the best example, you got a bunch of kids making jokes in a group chat. Do they really love Hitler? No, probably not. In fact, the joke doesn't even work if they like Hitler. It was a joke because you say the thing that is so clearly a joke that it's funny, right? It's like, you know, do I need to explain humor? Do I need to explain how humor works? That when somebody says, whoever's the most right wing wins, and I go, well, I like Ronald Reagan. That's like not funny because I do like Ronald Reagan and he wasn't that far right. So it doesn't make any sense. When you say I love Hitler, it's funny because I clearly don't love Hitler and he's so far right. It's absurd to say that you're that far right. It's called humor, folks. Obviously, it's humor. So they leak these messages in a coordinated attack with a liberal publication to smear all Trump supporters, but specifically people in his orbit, with the out-of-context, quote, I love Hitler, even though it was a joke. Then you have people going, well, you know, this is horrible. You have to denounce it. And then we go, no, first of all, it's a joke. I'm not denouncing a joke. Second of all, this is clearly just an attack on the right. This is just an attack on Republicans. It's just trying to destroy young people that are energetic and involved in the political, like, this is just so clearly an attack, we're not going to fall for it. Like, everybody who's fallen for this are the same people that would denounce Donald Trump after he said both people, you know, good people on both sides. And a bunch of people on the right did condemn that because they're liars. It wasn't true. It was never true. So they say, you have to condemn this. You have to denounce this. And we say, no, it was a joke. And we're not denouncing our own because the left demands it. This is stupid. And then they go, oh, so you won't denounce Nazis? You won't denounce not, so you are a Nazi. So therefore you are a Nazi. And so now people on the right are trying to destroy other people on the right for not condemning a joke because apparently that makes you a Nazi. This is stupid. And the outcome was obvious to see for anybody. What you're doing by participating in that witch hunt over the Young Republicans group chat was showing the left that this is an easy and effective way to destroy anybody you don't like. And they're seeing that that's the case and they're picking it up and running with it. We have this. Spotted while walking around the George Washington University campus in Washington, D.C. It is a flyer that says, have you been added to a Nazi/MAGA group chat? We pay cash for screenshots. Screenshot.gop. Verifiable scandals, racist rants, and sexist tirades all accepted, the worse the better. So now you, the right-wing Zionists, have now created, manufactured a market for spying on and doxing right-wingers. And if people are actually saying bad stuff, that's one thing. These people aren't actually saying bad things. That doesn't matter. Jokes are being blown up to be, you know, evidence of Nazism and being used to force people out of the party. And a bunch of stuff went on in the background you probably don't know about. They tried to literally destroy the Young Republicans over this. A bunch of the Young Republican donors tried to force leadership out of all of these independent offices of the Young Republicans. And luckily, the young people in the Young Republicans weren't being intimidated by this and just said, no, we don't have to resign. We're not going to resign. You can't make us. And they tried to pressure them. I mean, imagine being like a 19-year-old kid in college running the Young Republicans, and you're being approached by, like, you know, lawyers that make $100 million a year from the biggest political organizations in the country trying to put as much pressure as they can on you to quit over this. And these young guys didn't quit. And they said, no, screw you. This is just how we talk. We're not resigning. Because what they want to do is bring in a bunch of rhino. One day we'll tell the whole story about it. But this is what's happening behind the scenes. This is what all of the chaos in the right wing is being caused by. And so now, how easy do you think it will, and you know, the effect of this may be subtle, but it will be impactful, right? The young people now thinking about being involved in the Young Republicans, I'm sure they'll moderate their language. They'll probably just, you know, not communicate quite as much, be a little bit more hesitant to bring new people in. Because now they got to be paranoid about who's spying on them, who's going to leak their chats. They're going to have to be self-censoring themselves. Like, because they didn't want the Young Republicans to be anti-Zionist, now the Young Republicans are severely damaged as an institution. They have all this ammo that, again, just gets implanted in the left's head that, oh, the right wing are Nazis and they all love Nazis and they're coming up for other Nazis in their party. All BS, but all created out of whole cloth by the Zionist side of the right wing spectrum. It's infuriating. And it goes on and on. Harvard used to have a conservative magazine until this week. Did you know that? They were forced to shut down because they published articles laced with, quote, Nazi rhetoric. You see what happens when you go along with this? You see what happens when you give credence to these ridiculous claims? You're literally providing ammo to your enemies. You're arming your enemies. You're telling your enemies exactly what you need to do to defeat us, and then you're actually contributing to that by claiming that off-color jokes, or in this case, articles about how France is France and Germany is Germany, get decried as Nazism and forcibly shut down. And the publisher of this, the Harvard Salient, which is now shut down because of this article that says, you know, France is France and Germany is Germany. He says, this article is a meditation on how nations and cultures preserve coherence in an age of rootless cosmopolitanism and global homogenization. To confuse a defense of belonging for a manifesto on exclusion is the fault of the reader, not the writer. Right? Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Oh, you're trying to write a publication, you know, reinforcing or making the argument for just basic conservative values? Too bad, that's Nazism now. And you have, you know, the control freaks, the pro-Israel side of the Republican Party, to thank for laying this groundwork, laying the runway for this to take off. Yeah, they shouldn't obey suspension. No, the only way to get out of this is just to refuse to comply with any of these people ever.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures about it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue, and I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
It is a miracle. It's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there. My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to pay, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day.
Right.
And pay what? I don't know. $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is, yeah. Yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
right, welcome back, folks. I go on and on about this topic, but we'll move on for now, although we'll probably return to it in a little bit. But I got a good video to show you. Clip 14 here. And, you know, we try to stay on top of everything. I feel like we're missing an opportunity here. Nobody told me that Dr. Peter Hotez is going around trying to sell his book, doing book signings and appearing in public and taking questions. Why do we not know this? And why is he not being bombarded with pertinent questions about the lies he spread about the vaccine, about the cover-ups he's engaged in with gain of function? We need to know these things. We need to confront these people peacefully. When you got somebody like Dr. Peter Hotez, which is, he's like the gremlin version of Fauci, in public trying to sell a book of lies, he needs to be questioned by the public who are informed and know the truth. Luckily, we have at least one person who's done this. This is at Politics and Prose, which is a very famous bookstore in D.C. that's been featured on this program before, because they were actually, the owner of Politics and Prose was the owner who denied Xi Jinping the ability to have a book release party at his, because he's like, no, I don't want anything to do with the Chinese communists. And the Chinese communists got in contact with some of their friends in America. They twisted some arms, and then this guy was forced to allow Xi Jinping to use his outlet. But it was a surprising thing, because Politics and Prose is an extremely leftist outlet. That's why they're hosting Peter Hotez. But I do have some respect for them in that they told Xi Jinping no, even if they were forced to back down, because of the mafia tactics of the Chinese aligned here in America. But let's go to clip 14 here. This is Dr. Peter Hotez being confronted by an informed fan of ours, I think. Let's watch.
Peter Daszak was the guy that proposed the experiment that resulted in COVID. And Peter Daszak and Jeremy Ferrer were business partners in Vietnam in 2008, and that was in U.S. Right to Know. Emily Kopp was the first to report that.
So that, we got a long line. Can you give us a question?
Yeah, but you know, you're also citing some disinformation sources.
I'm just saying.
And let me just say,
ethical scientists disclose their relationship with people that do unethical experiments and fault in leaky labs. So Peter Daszak.
Let me just say one. Those experiments were never done. Seth, first of all, and second, the National Defense Intelligence Director has come out with the summary statement saying that gain of function had no role in COVID origins. And so.
That's such a lie. That's such a hilarious lie. The experiments weren't done, but the experiments definitely had nothing to do with COVID-19 coming out. You know, the experiments that didn't happen definitely weren't involved in the disease that arose naturally, I'm sure. So I just found this before the show, and I looked around a little bit. I couldn't find his schedule. I couldn't find the touring schedule. If he's in Austin, I'd love to go. I'd love to go shake his hand. Again, this is the type of stuff we need InfoWarriors keeping us abreast about and sticking on top of. Peter Hotez is doing an open event in your area, and you get to ask him a question about gain of function, about the efficacy of the vaccine, about the claims that he's made. Hell, ask him about autism and the effects that vaccines have there. It's our duty to peacefully, always respectfully, ask the questions and make the points that these people don't want you asking, don't want you making. I want to tread carefully here, because I want this in no way to ever be construed as any sort of call to violence, because it's absolutely not. But these people should not feel comfortable taking questions from the public, because they should feel humiliated every time it happens. That every time somebody comes up, they should feel sinking in their heart and go, oh God, this is another guy who knows his stuff. Oh man, this is another person that's going to ask me about something I have to lie about. They should be bombarded with questions that they know the answer to but refuse to say. That's our duty.
Methylene Red is the ultimate complement to Methylene Blue. It's like
Batman and Robin, right? This is Robin. Okay, I just took this, and I only took three droppers full. And I feel like calm energy, if that makes sense. I feel like if I want to go think about something or go deep into something, I can do that right now. It's like a sour warhead, and it's like, oh my God. And then I'm like, oh wow, okay, I actually feel it. Same way you feel methylene blue, you feel this. So
look at this, look at it.
Here's your normal methylene blue, right? Look at methylene red. Dude, that's a freaking tank. If you're taking this, you really need this. It's like, you know how Big Pharma always tells you, hey, if you get, you know, this SSRI, you're gonna need this to go with it. Well, this is the natural, more natural way to do it. You got methylene blue and you got methylene red. These complement each other and you need both of them. Go to thealexjonesstore.com today and get yours. And I think right now it's 50% off if you subscribe.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at x.com.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. I got a lot of videos to show you here. We'll be joined later this hour by Naomi. I'm going to get it right. Zeiped. Naomi Zeiped. I got it right. And she is she's a very powerful independent journalist from Germany that is the first woman from Germany seeking refugee status and requesting asylum from the United States to escape her tyrannical government. Very excited to talk to her later this hour. But I'm going to go to some videos here, and I got a lot of news to get into as well in terms of new stuff that's come out about Arctic frost and so much more. But let's begin with a hearing that occurred earlier today about violence, political violence, okay? And there's some interesting back and forth. Let's go first, clip number 16. This is the committee chair, Senator Dick Durbin, with his opening remarks. And then we'll go to a Republican demolishing the lies he says in these remarks. So first, clip 16, here's Senator Dick Durbin trying to pretend he cares about political violence.
At the outset, I want to recognize law enforcement who are here today, including those who defended the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, and the family members of those who are no longer with us. Ken Sicknick, brother of fallen officer Brian Sicknick, is here. He reminds us, and I quote, "The simple act of not letting the events of that day be whitewashed, revised or forgotten, is more important than anyone can ever know." That statement by Mr. Sicknick rings true, painfully true today. This hearing examines a critical issue, political violence in America. I've said before over and over from this podium and will repeat, violence is not acceptable whatever the source or origin. I do not believe that one party owns the right to say it's the other party's fault. It is the fault of both parties in differing degrees. And it's our fault if we try to whitewash that reality. To seriously address this problem, we must be honest. We must start with the facts, not with partisan conclusions. To claim, as the chairman of the subcommittee has, and I quote, "political violence comes predominantly from one side of the aisle, and don't give me this both sides BS," is not supported by the facts. In fact, those facts tell a different story. For more than a decade, data from the FBI, DHS, and nonpartisan experts show that far-right extremists have been responsible for most domestic terrorism, including most deaths by far. On this chart, which you can see behind me.
All right, and then he shows this ridiculous chart that we've already debunked a million times. And, of course, the hypocrisy is there in his own words, where he's like, you know, this problem of political violence, it's a huge issue. It doesn't belong to just one party. But let me tell you about how it is the right wing, and it's entirely the right wing doing this. It's like, okay, great. You can't even stick to your own admonishment, even though you're the wrong one. I mean, if you're going to blame one party, it ain't the right. Senator Eric Schmidt let him know this. Clip 17, the report that Dick Durbin cites to justify the outrageous claim he just made itself is just complete and utter hogwash, and it's been thoroughly debunked by people actually doing the research and showing you their work. Let's watch.
Thank you, Senator. I want to point out that the CSIS study that's been mentioned here and repeated ad nauseum excluded violence at protests from their study, allowing them to systematically ignore Antifa and Black Lives Matter riots. But they did make an exception for Charlottesville, interestingly. Even using their flawed methodology, CSIS recently reported that left-wing violence in 2025 outpaces right-wing violence. Imagine how much bigger that disparity would be if they actually were cooking the books. So without objection, I move to enter into the record an article by Tim Carney explaining CIS's biased methodology. Without objection, will be entered into the record.
So again, we've been over this over and over, but it's not actually that difficult to understand. They just don't count left-wing violence as left-wing violence, and they count all violence by right-wingers as right-wing violence. It's as simple as that, and we've shown the examples over and over. Just to remind you, you can have somebody like the shooter in Nashville who wrote a manifesto explaining that she was driven to do this by her leftist ideology. Transgenderism, anti-Catholicism, it was clearly and, you know, deliberately laid out. Here is my motive. I'm a left-winger. I hate the right wing. That's not counted. They don't count that as left-wing violence. They say, well, she's clearly crazy, and you can't count crazy people as left-wing violence. That's just mental illness. So we're not going to count that. Then you can have a guy who went to prison, joined the Aryan Brotherhood as a prison gang member, and then kills his wife in an argument, and they count that as right-wing political violence. And these are actual examples. I'm not just coming up with things that might have happened. These are actual examples from the study that they cited. So every violent act a right-wing person does, even if it has nothing to do with their politics, is considered right-wing political violence. Well, you can have a left-winger write a manifesto explaining their motive as being compelled by their left-wing ideology, and it is not considered left-wing violence. That's how you get the answers that you get. Tom Carney does do a great job of laying this out from AEI.org, the shoddy efforts to pin political violence on the right from the American Enterprise Institute. And it turns out if you count the January 6 riots but not the Black Lives Matter riots, then the right is infinitely more violent than the left. If you don't count racist black men mowing down a bunch of white people as left-wing racist murder, but you do count a suicidal kid with President Trump on his hit list killing two white strangers as a right-wing racist murder, then you can get the results that appeal to the liberal media. And again, these are actual examples of this. They just lie. It really is as simple as that. I mean, off the top of my head, I can think of multiple examples of vans being driven into right-wing voter drive tents. I can think of pro-life institutions that have been bombed repeatedly. I can think of the violence against us at InfoWars, the swatting that we've been under. The guy that showed up with a gun to Nick Fuentes' house. The guy that, I mean, multiple people have been killed walking around, you know, door knocking for pro-life causes, and they get murdered. They get stabbed. They get shot. There was one guy that was in an argument with two Republican door knockers, went, got in his car, and drove over them, killed them. That's not considered a politically motivated murder. They're just lying. They're just counting right-wing violence as right-wing political violence, and they don't count left-wing violence as violence. I really don't need to belabor the point, because it really is just that simple. But you should check out the article, The Shoddy Efforts to Pin Political Violence on the Right, from American Enterprise Institute. But it gets worse than this, and it's compounded by the fact that these people are they're using a dead body to make their point, but it's not somebody that was actually killed by the right. Like, it's bad enough if you're standing on somebody's grave to try to make a point, but they're standing on the grave of somebody that wasn't even killed by the right wing, and it's very weird. This is clip number one here. This is a D.C. police officer. I think this might be the brother of Brian Sicknick. He brought the helmet as a prop to this hearing to, convince everybody that Brian Sicknick was murdered on January 6th, even though he committed suicide several days later. Let's watch.
Just so you know, that this is the helmet that U.S. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick wore on January 6th, 2021. And He died the following day. The family member just got back that today. Thank you.
So there's, he says Brian Sicknick was killed on January 6th, or he died the next day. The implication being from his injuries that he received on January 6th. Now we go to clip number two. This is Brian Sicknick walking around in the Capitol after all of the events of January 6th had taken place. Even though he was apparently killed by the mob on January 6th, here he is walking around after the riot. Clip two. Clip two. There he is. There's Brian Sicknick. Strangely enough, it doesn't even look like he's wearing the helmet that he has on the desk. That looks more like a full face helmet with the thing on the side. Maybe it is. Maybe it's the right helmet, but yeah, there, you know, walking around, I guess he died from this. Again, I'm not trying to make light of the man's death, but he wasn't killed by the mob. He wasn't killed on January 6th. That never happened. Here he is, walking around. It's all sort of calmed down. There's no rioting. There's no violence. Nobody's killing him. That's certainly true. And yet they go out today and try to tell you that he was killed on January 6th, and they bring the helmet as a talisman. I'm sorry the guy died. I really am. It's tragic, must have been horrible for his family. He wasn't killed on January 6th. He wasn't killed by January 6th rioters. He doesn't even appear injured by the time all of the violence had concluded on January 6th. And yet they are trotting out his corpse to lie about the right being violent. I find that despicable. Officer Brian Sicknick died after the Capitol riot. New videos show how he was attacked. Well, we just showed you videos after all the violence. He was walking around fine. And then I believe he killed himself later, or he died the next day from unrelated causes. Not from January 6th. And I thought this was put well by this X user at Taz Hawkeye KJ on X in response to Dick Durbin saying violent, you know, right extremists. You know, the right is really the violence one because that one day, that one time that some of them rioted because they were attacked by police. Remember that peaceful protest that only broke out into violence when a bunch of police 50 feet up on a balcony started firing deadly ammunition into the crowd, actually killing somebody with a heart attack, blow another guy's face off, and then the riot started. Remember that? That's why the right wing are the violent ones, because that one day that a bunch of peaceful protesters were fired upon without provocation and then wandered through the Capitol doors that were opened for them because they have to be opened from the inside, from a central office, the magnetic strips that lock the doors. So that's their point. That's what they want to portray as the only instance of political violence in this country's history since the 1960s, if you listen to them, worse than Pearl Harbor and everything else. Here's what Taz Hawkeye says. The media accepted the George Floyd protests as acceptable violence. This is the backdrop for the January 6th protest. Since the country accepted violence from the George Floyd protests, the people on January 6th protested in a similar manner. So that's not even totally true, because like I just said, if they'd wanted to do violence, they would have probably brought weapons. They would have probably started the violence, not been subject to it first. They probably could have taken over the Capitol and burned it to the ground if they wanted. Nothing could have stopped them. They didn't want to. That wasn't their goal. That's why it didn't happen. And yet, it wasn't just Black Lives Matter in all of 2020. That was a major part of it, and that did, in the minds of a lot of people, reorient what was acceptable and what wasn't politically. When you're told over and over and over on a daily basis for a year that this is valid political expression, that the riot is the voice of the unheard. And that's, by the way, when Black Lives Matter is burning down like libraries and small businesses and looting museums. And they're like, yeah, that's fine. Destroying people's business has nothing to do with it. But if you actually go to the people who make the laws and protest to them directly, like the Constitution says you're supposed to, that's not acceptable. That has to be crushed. Then we have 5,000 troops living in D.C. for 6 months, keeping the whole city on lockdown out of fear of another uprising. Also not objectionable, not tyranny, totally fine. Barbed wire around the Capitol, barbed wire around the White House, city in lockdown over a manufactured crisis. That's all fine to them, but you want to send a couple soldiers to Portland to protect the ICE agents, and that's tyranny. That's above and beyond. Again, it's just every aspect of this, every instance, every time they go out and talk, it's like you could just spend 3-4 hours trying to untangle the various webs of lies that they weave, and it's exhausting. But that's just who these people are. They're shameless, and they're willing to make a spectacle of it. It's absolutely insane. So, yeah, and it wasn't just Black Lives Matter. It was the lockdown. It was people not being allowed to go to school, not being allowed to go to work, you know, their kids' health being damaged with these ridiculous measures. And we took all of it. We kept our hands in our pockets. We didn't respond in kind. We didn't send out the National Guard, no Insurrection Act. For months on end, you had whole cities burning. You had tens of thousands of people on the streets every single day. And you had health experts telling us, actually, this is good for the coronavirus. Actually, this stops the spread. When you go out and praise Holy Saint George Floyd, then you are covered in the protection of God, you know, because clearly he is the new Jesus Christ reborn. And so it was a year of that. It was a year of going, it's fine. They just want us to go crazy because they don't want us winning this election. And we'll let them do it. We'll put up with it. We'll stay calm because we still have the election. We still have this outlet for our political participation. We still have the ability to vote how we're going to vote. And they can try to intimidate us and they can try to threaten us and they can try to burn down cities and everything else. But you know what? We're focused and we believe in this country and we're going to cast our vote like good Americans and we're going to win no matter what they do. And then they steal the election from you. And then they take that away from you. And they show you that all of your patience and all of your mercy was pointless because you never had the vote at the end of the day. Actually, that thing you were patiently waiting for, the thing you were like a good citizen wanting to use to affect change in an appropriate legal way, that was stolen from you. And then any attempt to bring awareness to the fact it was stolen was crushed by Bill Barr and the, you know, media, the controlled media, and the Democrats claiming that questioning an election was treason. So even after the election, when that last hope is stolen from the American people, when they've endured a year of relentless abuse and violence, we still then go crazy. We still, all we wanted was that 10-day investigation. All we wanted was for the requisite number of senators and congressmen to object to the electoral votes in order to get a real open investigation into the claims of fraud. That's what everybody went to Washington, D.C. on January 6th for. That was always the intention. That was always the design in the public conversations, in the private conversations. That's what this was all about. We go gathered outside of the Capitol. When the Capitol Police decide, you know what would really help this? If we start firing beanbags and, you know, tear gas into this crowd, which would have been easy to control if they'd had a sufficient number of security there, but that was deliberately withheld. So it's just infuriating. Again, it's worse than you could ever, you know, even describe. And it goes on and on. I'm just trying to see if we have any more. You know, let's go to clip 19 here. This is sort of about all of this. And it's just nice and refreshing to hear somebody who understands what's at stake here and what the forces are actually driving so many of the decisions made by the government today. And this is a lot about the shutdown, the SNAP benefits being taken away, and the way that minority groups especially, but really all Americans, are being kept in a state of desperation because that serves a political end. Let's go to clip 19 now.
Stop going to white liberals for money and then complaining about their power. Malcolm X said the white liberal is the worst enemy to America and the worst enemy to the black man. The white liberal's purpose is to perpetuate a system that will keep the black man dependent on the white liberal. Because the truth is, you can't be dependent and free at the same time. And that's the part nobody wants to say out loud, because once they control the way you think and what you depend on, they don't need chains anymore. But for just a minute, step outside of it. I challenge you. Let's do a little thought exercise. Look at this critically, not emotionally. That's where real freedom starts. Because the more you're emotionally attached to your race, the easier it is to control you. It's realizing we've confused education with indoctrination. The idea that we're inferior and therefore we must receive. That's the last stage of colonization, people.
the last chain left on our minds, the insistence that we're inferior. Shelby Seal said inferiority was established through white superiority and that white guilt has infantilized black America and it's allowed white liberals to act as our caretakers rather than our equals. And the more we tell white people they need to give in order to be racist, the more we'll receive and the more we'll depend and the more we'll reinforce the same lie that we're inferior. And it'll never stop. Because dependency isn't progress, it's slavery dressed up as compassion. Because when you depend on the system, you can't be controlled by it. And control is the opposite of freedom. Because freedom is never the reward for moral innocence, it's the reward for moral responsibility, Shelby Steele. The more you rely on them for a check, the more you'll vote for that check. You'll vote for what they call empowerment and assistance. It's not about progress. It's not about excellence. It's about profit and power and your vote. And all that time you spend scrolling, start reading what makes you uncomfortable. Not 3-minute videos that enforce the cage around your mind. Slavery was psychological, not just physical. Stop pointing fingers and asking for regression packaged in a reparations check. Change your mindset.
Bravo. That's a woman on TikTok. Black_card declined. Black_card declined is who uploaded that. She's exactly right. And people really don't think deeply enough about this. I really got nothing to add. I was just sort of taking notes as she was talking. You can't be dependent and free. It's as simple as that. What'd you say? Dependency? Dependency is just is slavery dressed up as compassion. That's the quote right there. Dependency is slavery dressed up as compassion. 100%. That's what all of these SNAP people don't understand. They think they're being given a gift. They're being enslaved. They're being instructed to put on their own chains and told that it's freedom. It's disgusting, but true. Really incredible stuff. Again, black_card declined. I had not seen her before, and I was very impressed by that. Let's go. Well, you know what? We're not going to have time for that because we're about to be joined by Naomi, and I've gone half this show without once asking you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. We won't be here if you don't. So please, folks, for your own good, go to thealexjonesstore.com because we have incredible products there. Ultra Methylene Red is the new – I liked how Nate was saying it in the video, the Robin to the Methylene Blue Batman, the tag team, the unstoppable duo, Methylene Blue and Methylene Red. Methylene Red just dropped at thealexjonesstore.com. It's the ultimate Methylene Blue super enhancer, not to mention an incredible product all on its own. The active B2 that slams the door on migraines and supercharges your cellular grid. It's got P5P form of B6 that cranks out GABA, serotonin, and dopamine like a neurotransmitter factory. It's got 5,000 micrograms of neurological B12 that regrows damaged nerves and shields your memory. 5 grams of TMG. It fuels your DNA. It fuels DNA repair and detoxifies your brain 24/7. 100 milligrams of CoQ10. I mean, honestly, this product is amazing by itself. It's just if you use it with Ultra Methylene Blue, it really maximizes the power of both. So if you take Methylene Blue, I highly encourage you to pair it with Ultra Methylene Red. But even if you're not on Methylene Blue, I know some people can't take it because of medicines, Ultra Methylene Red will give you that kick. It will supercharge your brain in a very similar way to Ultra Methylene Blue, but it doesn't have some of those, interactions with other drugs that can make Methylene Blue a little bit dangerous if you haven't, looked into it and asked your doctor about it. So make sure you ask your doctor, make sure you are read up on the effects of this and some of the drug interactions, but Ultra Methylene Red is an incredibly powerful new product. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you.
What out there could have an effect like Methylene Blue and synergistically work with it to boost it and supercharge it? So I got with Bigley. They've been making supplements long before I got with them. And I got with Chase, who's really smart. And I said, I want you to go to a couple of different formulators and ask them what you think's the best. Announcing, ladies and gentlemen, Ultra Methylene Red. Now, this bottle is 3 times the size of an Ultra Methylene Blue bottle because it's to have the formula, you got to have a lot more stuff in it. But this, ladies and gentlemen, is amazing. And it just came in yesterday. I took it with the Methylene Blue. Incredible workout today. Clarity, focus, it is so amazing. And it works with Methylene Blue, and it works without it. And unlike Ultra Methylene Blue that you can't take if you're on a serotonin reuptake inhibitor or certain medications, nothing in this has any of those counterindications, but still consult your physician. But when you take it with ultramethylene blue, it just does synergistic things that are amazing. I mean, I had this idea like a month into methylene blue exploding. I said, we got to come out with something that's complimentary or even better. This is the research from that. You can buy three bottles, get 25% off. Buy two bottles, get 20% off. Buy one bottle, get 15% off. And when you subscribe and you cancel any time, it locks it in at 50% off at thealexjonesstore.com. So here it is, ladies and gentlemen. And it's available right now exclusively. Limited first run. A little more comes in a month, but they got a limited run. Chase, tell us about what is in Ultra Methylene Red.
Well, I got to tell you, I've never been prouder of a product launch than I am of this. I really had a heavy hand in this.
So we are officially the first company through the Alex Jones Store that's ever even invented or launched something like this called Methylene Red. So I'm incredibly proud. And so we put this together as both a methylene blue super enhancer, especially with the cognitive focus benefits, the mitochondria empowerment, and the brain dropping off an extra electron for the brain cells. But it's also an incredible standalone product. I mean, just to give you an example, Alex, one of our best sellers when we were still operating the InfoWars store was Ultra 12. And this has everything that Ultra 12 had in it. 206,000% your daily value of vitamin B12 through methylcobalamin. So this is all backed by studies, by the way. We looked very carefully into this. The P5P form of B6 that cranks out GABA, serotonin, and dopamine like a neurotransmitter factory. It's got 5,000 micrograms of neurological B12 that regrows damaged nerve cells and shields your memory from the brain drain agenda from the globalists. It's got 5 grams of TMG, a methyl donor juggernaut that recycles homocysteine, fueling DNA repair and detoxifying your brain. It's got acetyl L-carnitine in it. It's a brain-penetrating carnitine that floods your mitochondria with ATP, which is basically energy and reverses cognitive aging. It's got uridine monophosphate in it, the synaptogenesis rocket fuel that grows new dendritic spines and locks in razor-sharp memory, and just so much more. It's even got the CoQ10 in it, of course, which is huge, huge product that we've sold in different forms in the past. But this is the most impressive compilation of ingredients that I've ever seen in a supplement. I'm very proud that we launched it. I'm very proud that it's our second tincture on the market. And when I'm looking through these studies, I mean, here are the benefits that are listed. Migraine prevention, cardiovascular help, antioxidant, cellular protection. We've got neurotransmitter synthesis and mood helps people with depression, according to these studies I've looked at here. Even energy and fatigue reduction, more cardio production, cognitive support, mood cognition, endothelial function. I mean, it goes on and on. Nerve regeneration, cognitive and mood support.
So that's what you're getting with us, ultramethylene bread. Everything we sell is the most insanely powerful, best thing we can come up with, because this is what we take, and it's common sense to want to sell somebody something that really works. So that's why everybody just raves and raves and raves about the products at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
My name is Naomi Zeibt, and I am the first European to seek asylum in the United States of America under President Trump's new proposal for a refugee mandate, because I am facing persecution in my home country, Germany, for my political views, for my support for the AfD party, the only opposition party in Germany, and most importantly, for my advocacy for free speech. I have become the target of severe government and intelligence surveillance and harassment. My communications have been intercepted. And my family has been stalked by reporters for the state media for whom we pay taxes.
That video is going mega viral today, and that was Naomi Zeibt. She's the founder of the Naomi Zeibt Institute, where skepticism meets science and socioeconomic clarity, from breaking down complex studies for everyday people to challenging state overreach on climate and COVID policies. Naomi is on a mission to revive open debate and critical thinking in an age of echo chambers and censorship. You can follow her on X at Zeibt Naomi, and that's S-E-I-B-T Naomi, or NaomiZeibt.com. She's on Rumble at Naomi Zeibt. Naomi, thank you so much for joining us.
You did your research. Thank you so much. I should use these alternative platforms more, but I'm mostly on X, actually, because that's the one platform where I became most internationally recognized, especially because they don't censor me like YouTube, for example. I initially had a YouTube channel, and they took me down during the COVID pandemic because I started criticizing vaccines, which was not very favored, especially in the European Union.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. No, I've been a big fan of your work for a while. I remember that happening. And I don't blame you for wanting to get out while you can. I mean, this is a big deal. You are the first person from Germany, as far as we know, to request asylum from the Trump administration because of free speech concerns and concerns that you have of being targeted by the German government and, of course, Antifa that's there that works sort of hand in hand with the German government in sort of a strangely open way. And this, of course, follows Donald Trump opening up the asylum program for people like yourself. Tell us about what has been going on for you. What made you make this choice and reach out to America for asylum?
It's incredible. Looking back now, I started outing myself as a right-wing teenager, actually, when I was 16 years old. I'm 25 now, which means that's almost 10 years ago. And I originally had no idea what I was getting myself into. I did not know I was going to receive this kind of backlash. Mm. I could never see myself as a racist or a far-right person. I never associated myself with any political beliefs in my teenage and childhood years. So that became very apparent to me very early on, as soon as I started outing myself, as soon as I started posting videos on YouTube. And suddenly I had the state media harassing me, stalking my family. They came to my door when I was seriously deathly ill back in 2019. They came to my door, they knocked on the door, and they immediately started recording me. They essentially forced me into an interview for 45 minutes where they just tried to push like far-right anti-Semitic beliefs on me. So this lady, this was such a traumatic memory for me, honestly, because this lady, she was just pushing me in a corner and trying to get this far-right Nazi rhetoric out of me. And I just didn't give it to her because those are not my beliefs. And I was shocked because as a 19-year-old girl, I had never concerned myself with intelligence surveillance, with the actual reality of what we read in all these science fiction novels. And suddenly that was my reality. And then it escalated over the past years. I was, due to my illness for a long time, I had to step out of the spotlight. That's why after I became known as the anti-Greta Thunberg, I stepped down for a bit. But then last year, I started going back out there and posting initially on YouTube because I was unbanned after 3 years, because now you are allowed to criticize vaccines, actually.
Right.
And then suddenly I gained a large following on X. And at some point, Elon Musk recognized me when I approved of the AfD's policies, which was apparently something extremely controversial. And he was surprised himself. I made this post where I said, my name is Naomi Zeibt, and I support the AfD party. And he replied, essentially asking the question to everybody else who was reading, why is it that every time I mention the AfD party, I get so much negative feedback or everybody gets upset at me? And he asked me the same question in private messages soon after. And I can only respond with, it's because of the negative stigma and because they really try to destroy the AfD party because they are a threat to the establishment. They are not the Nazi party because the Nazis, they wanted to restrict free speech, which is exactly what the authorities are doing now. And it became worse and worse. And now they are committing these mass house raids against people. 170 in one single day, just a few months ago in June, I believe. So that's insane. They are putting people in jail. Multiple of my friends have been victims of these kinds of attacks. One of my friends has been in jail for 1 year. And then the German intelligence agency came to his jail cell to blackmail him so that he would spy on AfD members.
Wow.
Because then they would potentially shorten his sentence. And he said, no, I'm not doing that.
Wow.
So those are the kinds of brave Germans that we need.
Yeah, absolutely. And you pay the price for it in Europe and really anywhere. But Germany is particularly bad. And, you know, people in America maybe don't appreciate what we have with the First Amendment or the Fifth Amendment, for that matter. Like, you don't think about the fact that in Europe or in Canada, for that matter, you don't have a right to remain silent. They can actually compel you to talk, which is obviously what you're describing. They can throw you in jail if you refuse to, you know, tell them what they want to hear. It's extremely dangerous, as far as I understand. I'm preaching to the choir here, obviously. When it comes to AfD, there's an obvious pattern here that the more the AfD gets, the more popular it gets, the more they try to crush it. And I have a bunch of examples of this from End Wokeness. This is AfD support from 2021 to 2025. We can go .cam, and you can see here, it's not huge in 2021, but by 2025, you've captured basically the entire, Eastern part of the country. that is. And the latest is that AFD, some polls have shown that AFD is now, I think for the first time, right, the most popular German party, especially amongst the young, with sort of boomers being the only ones that aren't supporting it to such a high degree. But AFD surging in the polls, and almost like clockwork, they surge in the polls. Germany designates AFD as right-wing extremist organization and tries to destroy it. So, I mean, they really fear the AFD, and they really fear somebody like the AFD or the AFD themselves getting political power and making substantial changes. This is all political at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yes, there are two big questions that we should be asking. First of all, and I think you might be able to answer that yourself, why do you think the AFD is so popular in East Germany?
Right, because they were the former communists.
It's because the East Germans, they know what socialism is like.
Right.
Because they were living behind the Berlin Wall. And these people, they know exactly what it's like when you have the oppression from the state media, essentially, because they were not allowed to listen to Western media, for example. In Germany, now we have the problem that this has spread throughout the entire country. So now we only get the German media, but people barely get any access to international media. And now the entire, apparently, Western media is completely socialism-like. It's like watching communist TV. If you watch German news once, you will get so bored because it has this completely old communist vibe. There's nothing exciting about it. When I first started watching stuff like Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, even if you don't like these outlets, it's just the entertainment factor is there.
Right.
And it's not the same in Germany. It's extremely boring, especially for children and teenagers. And they want to keep it this way because they don't want young people to get involved with politics. You need to shut up. You need to follow and be obedient. That's the idea behind it. And then the second big question that should be asked is, why is it that the AFD is so popular now, but they didn't win in the last election?
Right.
The party that won the last election is the CDU party, the same party that won under Angela Merkel, of course. So that's the very party that brought us into this mess in the first place. They imported all these immigrants in 2015. And now we have Chancellor Friedrich Merz, who is supposedly a conservative chancellor, because the CDU likes to pose as the conservative party. The C stands for Christian Democratic Party. And yet they have completely betrayed their essential beliefs. Both Angela Merkel and Chancellor Friedrich Merz, they said completely different things back in like 2009.
Right.
And then they changed their beliefs completely. And now Chancellor Friedrich Merz, when he came to the White House and spoke to President Trump, he acted like he was best buddies with President Trump, like he was on the side of the conservatives now, because both of them actually dislike Angela Merkel because they were strong competitors, Chancellor Friedrich Merz and Angela Merkel in the past. However, the truth is that he, Chancellor Friedrich Merz, formed a coalition with the far left. Now they are wasting even more of our taxes on the far-left NGOs. This has been proven. And the state media keeps pushing these same messages, completely defaming the American government and even Charlie Kirk. Mm. And we saw that very recently where now some state media authorities, some journalists, they may have their visas banned because they completely defamed Charlie Kirk and even lied on his name in the media.
Wow.
And that's the only source of information that many Germans have.
Right. And of course, there's the ultimate irony in that they claim to be doing all of this for democracy, but they're trying to ban the most popular party. I mean, it's so hypocritical and ridiculous just on the face of it. It's hard to even take seriously. And I'd love if the crew can find a map of East and West Germany and overlay it, or, you know, put it next to the map of, you know, who's voting for AFD now. Because I'm pretty sure it is. It's right there, right? I mean, the AFD support stops right at the border of what was previously East Germany, which is East Germany. So obviously there's something to that, and it's obvious that people who've experienced this. I mean, it's a fascinating thing with Eastern Europe. But let's stick on Germany in particular and where what they're doing to AFD and what is happening to AFD politicians. We have this story, right? What do we know about the deaths of 16 candidates in Germany? I believe most of them were AFD, and it was right before a big election, and a bunch of these people died. I've seen videos of Antifa attacking not even AFD members, like politicians, but just their supporters will get attacked and have signs outside of their house saying this person votes for AFD. I mean, the abuse and the oppression that goes on in Germany, I don't think people understand it. Can you help Americans understand what it's like to try to support the AFD in Germany right now?
It's extremely dystopian. And then I get people gaslighting me in the comments, usually left-wing Germans who are completely unaffected from all of this. And they themselves live in usually very privileged neighborhoods, so they don't see the actual ramifications of the mass migration crisis, for example. And they don't like to be associated with the AfD, of course, because they just don't like the look of being far right. In Germany, the AfD has been classified as far right by the German intelligence agency. But they published these documents where they explained why the AfD was classified as far right. And the main reason why is because of the AfD's ethnic-based nationalism. And we need to kind of deconstruct that idea and understand what it's actually about. It means that our identity as Germans is something that is related to our ethnicity.
Right.
And that's wrong. That's far right, according to the German intelligence community. But the truth is, if we look in the German constitution, Article 116 actually confirms that our identity as Germans is related to our ethnicity and to the origin of our parents. And that's why, for example, refugees after World War II who returned to Germany but still had the German ethnicity, they are Germans too, according to the German constitution. So there is an ethnic-based nationalism within our constitution. So the AfD is really doing nothing wrong from a legal perspective. It's just because for some reason we have completely changed and shifted the mainstream narrative over the past years.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course it's kind of offensive to me. I'm not even German, but it's offensive to me that, you know, they want to make this claim. I mean, it goes along with everything else they're doing in every other country. Same thing happened in France, where the right-wing party was looking like it was going to win. And so the moderate so-called conservatives team up with the far left to keep the right wing out of power. I mean, the parliamentary system seems very useful for that type of manipulation. But talk to us a little bit more about, like, your boss was in jail for a while over this. Like, What does it take to be sent to jail in Germany for your speech?
I am a proud representative for the leading German alternative media outlet Deutschlandkurier. I started working with them after my now boss, David Bendels from Deutschlandkurier, was sentenced to 7 months probation. He didn't go to jail, but he was sentenced to 7 months on probation for a meme of our former interior minister where she's holding up a sign that says, "I hate free speech."
Huh.
So that's chilling irony. That's honestly horrifying. And this case is still ongoing. Why? Because the opposition decided that's not enough for us. He should deserve a harsher sentence. That's pretty extreme. And after that, I decided I want to work with these people because I can do my work by myself and I'm having a great impact, but I need to support some kind of movement.
Right.
And of course, we have the AfD party, but I have confirmed from the very beginning that I don't want to be a politician. I want to make it very clear to everybody who supports me that I am not affiliated with the AfD in any way, because I want to be like a bridge between the people and the AfD. As soon as you're in a party, there is a chance that you might be compromised. Even if that's not the case, it might be the case, and then people can no longer trust you. And I just want to give that trust 100% to people. So I've never been paid by the AfD, and I don't want to in the future, ever. I just want to be a supporter for the AfD party, because I will be there as soon as they are in the government. I will be there to criticize them and to hold them accountable to what they have been preaching for the past years. I have a lot of faith that they actually want to accomplish what they are preaching. But I want to make it clear to the people who support me that I will not let them down as soon as they are in the government.
Yeah.
And I appreciate how American influencers and shows like InfoWars, of course, are doing the same thing in the United States right now and holding the Trump administration accountable.
Yeah, absolutely. And hey, one thing I can say positively about the Trump administration, especially J.D. Vance, is this is on their radar and they're concerned about the way that free speech is being destroyed in Europe. And he went, you know, early on in the administration and sort of, you know, gave a talking to the European leaders, saying, what are you even fighting for if you don't have free speech? Like, isn't this where free speech began? Why are you letting it slip through your fingers? So they are focused on this. Obviously, they've opened up the asylum program to people like yourself. I understand you're going to meet with Congresswoman Ana Paulina Luna to talk about this. So that's very exciting. It looks like it's moving forward. But again, like, you know, this is so crazy for Americans to hear. Your boss or the guy who runs the media company put up a meme, and if the crew can find the meme, I'd love to show it here. I mean, you might have to turn off your TV if you're in Germany, but a meme of a politician holding a sign that says, I hate free speech. She jails him for that, completely proving him right. Again, the hypocrisy is mind blowing. But there's a part of the Constitution of Germany that actually makes it illegal to criticize politicians, right? Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, it's Article 188, which was extended under former Chancellor Angela Merkel. So that's where all of this is coming from, this kind of Soviet majesty clause that we have in the Constitution now. And it states that it's illegal to insult a politician. So you're not even allowed to, for example, post a poop emoji next to a politician's name or face. Oh, that was one incident that we have seen. And you're not allowed to damage their reputation. And I think that's the most difficult part. That's the most critical part, because how are you ever going to be allowed to criticize a politician at all without damaging their reputation? Isn't that the whole point? Yes, I want to damage the reputation of a politician that I don't support. That's the whole idea, because I want to damage his reputation to the point where people no longer vote for him. And that's how democracy works. That's how I understand it. You're allowed to support a party, but you're also allowed to point out when another party is doing something bad. And what about Hitler, for example? He's an important political figure in Germany. Am I not allowed to criticize him?
Well, what about the leaders of the AfD? Are they not politicians in Germany? That's the thing, right? They write these laws and then they choose whether to apply it or not. So if
there is an example, yes.
Yeah.
You are allowed to call Alice Weidel, the AfD leader, a Nazi whore.
There you go. But you can't say that the CDU is not free speech. So there you go. But the image you just saw on screen, by the way, the crew found the meme. That is illegal in Germany. This is a crime in Germany. You will be put on probation if you share that meme. So share away is my opinion. So again, we have to understand what a blessing the First Amendment is in America. Like, Americans don't appreciate it. I feel like you probably appreciate it more than Americans do because you don't have the First Amendment and it's caused all this trouble. But your asylum application isn't just about the restrictions to your speech, right? I mean, you are under physical threat because you express your views in Germany. Can you talk to us about how the state works hand in hand with Antifa there and actually makes it a very unsafe environment for people such as yourself?
Yeah, Antifa is even more dangerous than it is in America. And I know that sounds pretty insane because we've seen what's going on in Portland, for example, in Chicago. But it's worse in Germany because that's where the movement originated and because it has become so normalized.
Right.
You have Antifa walking out on the street as if it's the most normal thing in the world. If it's like a trend, it's a look you can put on and you stand for it proudly. It's a movement that especially young adults go to when they don't have any orientation in life. It's like another gender. Right. That's how common it is in Germany, and especially in my hometown, unfortunately. And so especially when I started going online, posting YouTube videos and becoming far right in the media, I received a lot of death threats. And this has increased a lot again, especially last year, as I received public support from Elon Musk, and that made me more widely known in the media as well. And it became very, very well known that I supported the AfD internationally and I was having a big impact. So I received even more death threats because I was becoming a threat to the establishment narrative and especially to the far left. And the problem is, I don't even hate these people themselves because they have been so indoctrinated.
Right.
They have been brainwashed to the point where they look at me and they see a Nazi, they see a monster. They see someone they have to kill. They have been trained to kill me. And the problem is, when I reported this to the police in Germany, especially when I was like 19, 20 years old, they told me, we cannot do anything about it. As long as you haven't been raped or killed or hurt in any other way, there's nothing we can do. They even tracked phone calls that I got from Antifa with death threats that I recorded. And my mom just sent me some of these recordings today and it was chilling to listen back to it. I gave all this to the police and they found out who was behind it. And still they couldn't do anything about it. As long as you haven't been hurt or killed or raped, there's nothing we can do about it. And you might be asking, then why didn't you hire security? Why didn't you instantly do something about it? Because you have to also realize we didn't have a strong father figure in the household. I was living with my single mother and my little sister,
right,
whom I was worried about the most, by the way. And she's not political at all, so I'm not dragging her into anything. The reason why I didn't hire security or anything else is because I wasn't making any money.
Right.
I was not making money with my beliefs. Meanwhile, the media were claiming that I was probably paid by, I don't know, the tobacco industry.
Right.
That was never the case. I stand for my beliefs. And that's always been important to me, above everything else.
Wow, but you know, but this is sort of the pincer move that they have German citizens in. You've got the government calling AfD terrorists and sort of giving her far-right extremists and sort of giving any credence to the random thugs on the street that are, you know, coming up from the bottom and attacking people as this, you know, disorganized but violent force that, again, gets to act with total impunity. And some of the videos I've seen of just regular people, you know, their neighbors learn they vote for AfD, and there's like Antifa people waiting outside their house for them. I mean, it is really brutal and kind of insane. You've been getting a lot of press for this. Your video's gone totally viral. I encourage people to watch the full video. Again, you can follow Naomi at ZeiptNaomi.com or Naomi Zeipt. I'm sorry, at ZeiptNaomi on X. NaomiZeipt.com and on Rumble at Naomi Zeipt. I'm really trying to get, did I get your name right?
It's perfect. Yes. It's basically, you can pronounce it like Z-I-P-E-D. That's how I like to explain it to Americans.
Yes. Okay. Good. Naomi Zeipt, but it's S-E-I-B-T, S-E-I-B-T. Mm-hmm. If you want to find her. So what is the next step for you? When are you going to know if your application is accepted? Maybe after the meeting with Anna Paulina Luna, what's next for you in your mission to try to escape Germany with your life?
It was very important for me that I apply the normal route. I'm not going behind anyone's backs. I didn't go to the Trump administration or anything. I got a lawyer, and then she's doing this for free for me. So she's an amazing woman who just said this is crucial for the sake of free speech. And so, I honestly hope that she may also have some media appearances because I value her work a lot. But yeah, I did it in the normal way. I had to fill out all these papers and write my asylum statement. And then I sent it in. And now the next step is I'm waiting for an interview appointment. And then after the interview, we will eventually find out. And that it can take multiple years sometimes. I'm hoping that in my case, it may go faster. And then in the future, I love America so much that the most likely outcome for me is that I will eventually apply for a normal visa. But the reason why I'm applying for asylum is not just because I just want to stay in America. I could have gotten a journalism visa or something else. The reason why I'm applying for asylum is because I am actually seeking the protection from the United States government. I wouldn't be doing this if I wasn't seriously worried for my life. And this honestly applies to my family as well. But my hope is that by being in the United States...
We're coming
States,
to a break here. If you can stay for 5 more minutes, I'd love to talk to you for 5 more minutes here.
Okay, no problem.
Real quick, I just wanted to plug the Methylene Blue. I'm a new supplement buyer from Alex Jones Store. And I keep hearing people talking about the Methylene Blue. And I'm like, you know what? I don't know what the hype is all about, but I definitely want to try it. And what I noticed is I didn't get the sensation that a lot of the other people said that they got. You know, like the tingling fingers and like this, you know, euphoria. But I do have an ample amount of energy. And I'm disabled, so I'm a housewife. And whenever you're at home, day in and day out, 7 days a week, it really tends to drag after some time. And there were things that I wasn't doing around the house that I should have. But now I'm getting things done like really quick. I have all this extra time on my hands now. And I really think it's the Methylene Blue that's been giving me the energy. And it's so funny because now like my silly husband's calling me a meth head, which is hilarious. But so I'm going to stick on that. And I actually have some bovine coming in today, so I can't wait to try that out. I'm also going to give that to my dog because, you know, I need a lot of help too. And I brought online that's really good for your dog if you give them, like, a small little amount of the food. So I'm going to do that. I just thought I would tell you guys about my experiences so far. So,
well, Jen, thank you. That's amazing to hear, and we love to hear that, honestly. I mean, that's the reason why Alex has created the shop, so people can get... you know, get healthier, not be relying on big pharmaceutical companies, but instead take control of their health. So that's good to hear. You know, I fluctuated weight-wise too. And so finding something that works is really important. And not to get hooked on those, like, high caffeine, insane chemicals, energy drinks, which so much of us have relied on over the years. I literally was getting anxiety from one of them. And so I too am on the blue these days. So I guess your husband would call me a meth head, but, it's good to hear from you, Jen. I love it. I think it's great. And I love to hear from you as well.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Third hour is on. I'll be joined shortly by Ian Wendt. But my guest now is Naomi Zeibt, S-E-I-B-T, Naomi on X, NaomiZeibt.com on Rumble as well under that name. And you were just making such a powerful statement there at the end. We were coming up against a pre-program break, so we had to go to commercial there. But you, what you were saying was so powerful. I didn't want to cut you off. So I thought we'd spend this first 5 minutes of this hour sort of finishing that thought, and again expressing what a valuable thing the First Amendment is. How Europe is going down a very dark path. A lot of people in America are trying to follow that path. We saw a video from today of Obama saying maybe we need a little bit of government control of speech. The First Amendment's great, but that's unacceptable, and we have to understand the true horror that awaits us if we go down that road. And we've had a lot of issues with asylum in the last little while. I'm not the biggest fan of the asylum program, but I've always said from day one, the asylum program is good. It's something America should do. We should be a safe haven for people who are under threat from their own governments. And that's why I don't like people abusing it, because if you abuse it and it has to go away, then real people that really need help aren't going to get it. So whether it's somebody like yourself who's under threat from your own government and radicals in your own country, you're not being protected by your government, free speech activists in Europe, people in South Africa under, you know, threat because of their race, this is who the asylum program should be for. I really hope that you're accepted and asylum here in America. You'd be the first German to do so, but I doubt you'd be the last. If you would like to finish your thoughts about asylum and your plans into the future and how people can support and follow you, Naomi.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to mention, because you just pointed it out, how the asylum system shouldn't apply to everyone. I have been asked this question now multiple times, and they think it's this gotcha moment where they come to me and they say, don't you think it's very ironic that you're applying for asylum now, but you're against migrants in Germany? Uh-huh. But there is a big difference. That's not the gotcha moment you think it is, because I just don't want people who don't agree with our Western principles, who are an actual danger to our society and who don't respect the German flag, the German constitution. I don't want them in our country, because that's a threat to our citizens. And the government has a responsibility to protect their citizens first. And I came to the United States fully supporting the American government, the American country, the American people. And I am extremely patriotic about America. I celebrated 4th of July. Right. So I truly love America for what it is, and especially for the First Amendment. The Second Amendment too, I have been to a shooting range already. I am truly hoping that in the future, I can give to Germany what I see in America now. Obviously, Germany is never going to turn into America 100%, and it shouldn't, because Germany is different. Germany truly has a different culture. But I want Germany to have that kind of freedom and the courage, and especially the patriotism. Because now, just a few days ago, there were anonymous patriots who put up a bunch of German flags.
Right.
And now the German intelligence agencies are investigating.
Oh, my God.
Because patriotism is illegal, apparently.
It is so crazy. I mean, that out of all the crazy stuff, getting in trouble for raising your own country's flag has to be, you know, a new mark on the absurdity scale. But it's hard to compete when you've got them banning the most popular party to preserve democracy and putting people in jail for saying that they're anti-free speech. I mean, the whole thing is just as ridiculous as it can be. But, you know, not to make light of it, it is a serious issue. You are under threat. I do think we should be offering you asylum, and I hope that Anna Paulina Luna helps you get through some of the bureaucratic red tape. I just want to say thank you so much for coming on. We'll be watching your case with interest, and I would love to have you on with any advancements or developments in the future.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Absolutely. Woman after my own heart, free speech, guns, less Germany. I do love Germany. Naomi Zeibt. Again, you can follow her on X at Zeibt Naomi, NaomiZeibt.com, on Rumble at Naomi Zeibt as well. That's S-E-I-B-T. And again, that video has gone totally viral, and I expect a lot more news about this in the future. If she gets asylum, you know that's going to piss a lot of people off. A lot of people who claim that everybody in the world is an American, anybody who gets across our border is eligible for asylum, they're going to change their tune real quick when it's a bunch of freedom-loving, frankly, pretty German girls. They're not going to feel quite the same way about them as they do about the hordes of dependents that flooded across our border in the last few years. We'll be back on the other side to talk about Charlie Kirk's murder and the developments that have come about thanks to independent research.
Methylene Red is the ultimate complement to Methylene Blue. It's like Batman and Robin, right? This is Robin. Okay, I just took this, and I only took three droppers full. And I feel like calm energy, if that makes sense. I feel like if I want to go think about something or go deep into something, I can do that right now. It's like a sour warhead, and it's like, oh my God. And then I'm like, oh wow, can I actually feel it? Same way you feel Methylene Blue, you feel this. So
look at this.
Here's your normal Methylene Blue, right? Look at Methylene Red. Dude, that's a freaking tank. If you're taking this, you really need this. It's like, you know how Big Pharma always tells you, hey, if you get, you know, this SSRI, you're gonna need this to go with it. Well, this is the natural, more natural way to do it. You got Methylene Blue and you got Methylene Red. These complement each other and you need both of them. Go to the alexjonesstore.com today and get yours. And I think right now it's 50% off if you subscribe.
You're tuned in to the War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room, third hour's in on, is on. I don't know what's happening to me today. My words are getting all mixed up here, which wouldn't be a problem, except I host a radio show, so it's sort of... It's like a runner breaking his leg. We're going to be joined by Ian Wendt in just a second. We're going to talk about the Charlie Kirk murder and all of the developments that have occurred since we were last updated by the FBI, which I think was like 3 days after the murder. We were told they got the guy, and then that's pretty much all we've heard so far. There's some very interesting developments in this. Some rumors flying about the FBI leader, Kash Patel, pretty much getting in a shouting match with Joe Kent, working under Tulsi Gabbard, because they were looking in to potential involvement from foreign actors in the Charlie Kirk murder. And apparently, Kash Patel wanted to shut that down. Very suspicious. Yet another suspicious thing to add to the list of very suspicious circumstances around the death of Charlie Kirk. The shooter, the roommate. The roommate disappeared, by the way. Nobody's seen him in 6 weeks. Little odd, especially when we've learned more about the shooter and the roommate, Lance Twiggs. It seems like Lance Twiggs was pretty well involved, maybe not with the shooting or the planning of the shooting, but certainly in the psychological development of Tyler, if he is in fact the shooter. But we're not seeing a lot of evidence reinforcing that claim. In fact, we're seeing a lot of evidence causing people to question the claim of Tyler Robinson being the sole shooter, the lone actor, as always. And that's always the case when it's presented. You know what? I want to actually start this on a somber note, as we should. I'm genuinely not even going to be able to play this video without crying, but we're going to do it. Clip 28 here. Because with all the talk about Charlie Kirk's murder, all the people who are leaking Charlie Kirk's text messages, or as some people put it, standing on his grave to try to win political points for one side or the other, claiming his legacy for their own, the actual human cost of this can get buried under all of that controversy. So I want to go to clip 28 here, just so we can sort of set the tone of what it is we're talking about when we get into Charlie Kirk's assassination and what it really means. Let's watch.
Erica Kirk just posted this video yesterday, and it was heartbreaking.
Charlie, come. Everybody, Charlie, now.
It's so easy for people to move on, to just scroll past, to forget about Charlie, the tragedy, his work. But this video reminds us that behind all the noise, behind all the headlines and the slandering, that there's a family. A daughter is without her father. A wife is without her husband. I am not moving on from this. Never forget what they took from us. And when I say never forget what they took from us, I mean it not out of anger, but out of purpose. We can't afford to cower in fear in the face of grave evil any longer. The moral rot and depravity, the insanity, the chaos is growing exponentially. The enemy behind this evil must be utterly defeated. This evil is what took Charlie Kirk from us, from his family. Don't forget, lest you become complacent. Charlie Kirk's name will not fade. His legacy will not die. The impact Charlie Kirk's martyrdom had for America, for the kingdom of God, should remind us of why we keep pushing forward. For our God, for our families, for our nation, Charlie's daughter, Charlie's children will have the world that Charlie wanted for them. We will make sure of it.
He's exactly right. And of course, I wasn't as big of a fan as I should have been of Charlie Kirk, is what I realized. Like, I wasn't his biggest fan while he was alive. I liked what he did. I was, you know, in support of what he did. In fact, I think the most valuable thing that he did was introduce people that wouldn't be interested in the, in these topics and this conversation about politics and conservatism. He had a real ability to appeal to the normies out there and make arguments that resonated with people. And I always understood that and respected that and appreciated that, but not to the degree that I should have probably. And it's unfortunate that's only after his death that, like, I think a lot of people realize sort of the impact that he had and the influence that he had and the things that he'd accomplished. I mean, I can't see a video of a Turning Point USA event. Hell, the one that he was killed at. And you just look at it and you go, this is a college campus in America. And the whole courtyard is jammed with young, excited, healthy, happy people coming together to promote conservatism. Like, that is an amazing thing, and it's an amazing accomplishment. And I don't know who killed him, but I want to find out. And I want to find out for his sake and his family's sake and for America's sake and for the sake of, you know, how we move forward and for the sake of Republicans to try to come together, because obviously this has become a point of division between Republicans. And so I feel like I'm approaching this from genuinely the purest concerns that you can have. I just want to find out who did it. I just want to know the truth. I just don't want to be lied to. I don't want to be fooled. I don't want to be coerced into believing something that isn't accurate. So we're going to, and I haven't kept up with all the developments. I could have. I probably would have gotten a lot of views if every single day I came in and dropped whatever rumors were being spread about Charlie Kirk. I've held off on doing that because I want to get the full picture. I want to get the holistic image. I want to be able to present it in its totality, not in little bits that never complete a thought. So we're going to do that today with Ian. Are we connected with Ian, guys? Okay. Ian Wint, also known as I Winster, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, on social media, is a husband and father, an entrepreneur, and proud American First Patriot. He's the founder and CEO of Official Patriot Gear, a premium apparel company whose mission is to emphasize the importance of nonpartisanship, nonpartisan patriotism, and freedom for all. You can follow him on X at I Winster. That's IWENDTSTER. On YouTube, The Ian Wint Show, and OfficialPatriotGear.com. Ian, great to have you on, sir.
What's up, dude? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm very glad to talk to you. And a lot of people are covering this, but I see a lot of your videos, and I think you do a really good job. But as I was talking to you on the phone about this, I want to give you some kudos, and we can cover the ground here. You were very concerned that you didn't want to get credit for other people's work. You were like, you know, if you were interested about this, you should have this person on or this person on. I'm like, well, I just want to do an overview, so I'd like you to come on and lay it all out. But Sam Parker, Ryan Matta, Ian Carroll, Candace Owens, yeah, a lot of people have done a lot of good work on this.
Yeah, absolutely. They've done an incredible job. And so, you know, when we originally talked, you were talking about like Google searches and stuff like that. And yep. I had to emphasize that Sam Parker is the one that's really been kind of the mastermind behind making that happen and getting that out in the public. But yeah, I think it's been a very collaborative effort for sure. You know, I live close to where it happened. And so I kind of got a lot of information and a lot of inside source stuff kind of dumped on my lap. And so I think that just kind of catapulted me into this whole thing in a different way than most people. But yeah, I really just tried to cover it, you know, as best as I can. And truly, like you said, not just kind of throw stuff out there, but share things that seem to have a lot of weight, right? Because at the end of the day, none of us really know exactly what happened. I think that's the most important thing to state is like, no one knows. And anybody that says they do is just, I mean, steer clear of those people because they don't know. Nobody knows. That's the whole point of this whole idea of conspiracy theory, right? But the other thing I think is really important to understand is that when there's a conspiracy theory, there's a lot of theories. There's a lot of holes that are being poked because that's the whole point of investigative journalism and trying to figure out what actually happened when the official narrative doesn't make sense.
Right.
And ultimately, that's what it means when you talk about a conspiracy theory. It just means that the people that are chasing these theories and trying to figure out what happened, they don't believe the official narrative. It doesn't mean they believe everything that comes out about it.
Right.
If that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it does. And I completely agree with you. And the problem with the Charlie Kirk murder is there's almost no official information. I mean, what are we even supposed to believe? That they got the guy, it took 33 hours, they got the confession, and that's it, case closed. And it's like, that's all we've heard. And I mean, we heard that at the, I think it was the mid-September, right? It was the 3 days after we got that. Since then, Cashfields has said he's going to look into everything. He said, don't worry, we're going to look into the plane, we're going to look into this, we're going to look into that. And then nothing. And then radio silence. And in fact, it's weird because one of the only pieces of information I've seen to come out since the, you know, announcement by Cash Patel that actually, you know, convinced me more towards Tyler Robinson wasn't even from the FBI. Turkey Tom made this video where I guess he got somebody in the Discord chats, leaked some of the Discord chats, and he goes through and talks about sort of the mental development of Lance Twiggs and Tyler Robinson. And it you know, it sort of added to the idea that, okay, there was something weird going on here. There was, this guy was not, doesn't mean he's not a patsy. Patsies have weird life situations too, but that didn't even come from the FBI. So lay out for us, like, what has the FBI given us and what are some of the major holes in that story?
I mean, dude, what, like, this is one of those things where I don't know where to start because it's like, lay out the holes. The whole thing has holes. None of it, like, if some of it made sense, it would be one thing, but nothing makes sense. I mean, first they said that it was, first they said that he assembled the gun and then disassembled the gun and then reassembled the gun and then left the gun.
Right.
And they said that he left it in one place and then they said he left it in another place. They said that he changed clothing outfits. Yet people are noticing that the dudes that they're saying are Tyler Robinson are wearing, they're not only wearing different clothes, they look like two totally different people.
Right.
Then they said that he stuffed the gun down his pants so that he could walk or so that he could get off the building. Like, there's so many holes. And then immediately after that, it's like, okay. So then you consider everything that revolves around the situation in general. And by the way, like, someone I know very well was actually there on the ground when it happened and like law enforcement. And something that he said that was very interesting was, dude, there was like five or six total campus officers for an event of over 3,000 people. None of the roofs were covered. Does that sound familiar? Right. There was hardly any security at all. And he confirmed that not only was there no security, Charlie's security detail refused to coordinate with the campus police and the local law enforcement, and they didn't ask for any more backup. And look, I'm not an expert or anything. I said this on one of my videos, but like that to me is really weird. And you would assume that they would ask for backup or that they would at least want to coordinate because then, you know, there's a bunch of people that are talking about how the only way to get up to the roof is key access or whatever, but the campus police have the keys. And so how could the security have the keys? And it's like, well, yeah, if they didn't coordinate with them, of course they can't, they don't have the keys, right? There's so many different holes. And it's so hard to just like start one where, because then after that, they talk about how he'd sent love letters, right? Or the love letter that he sent to my lover, roommate. Which, by the way, that thing stunk to high heaven of AI. I mean, it's like a boomer put it together with a bunch of other boomers and was like, yeah, this is sick. Send it.
Right.
Like, this'll work for sure. But it just sounds so fake. And I can't decide if they truly just are that incompetent or if, I don't know. It blows my mind, man, because none of the official narrative makes sense.
Right.
You know?
And there's just a total dearth of information. I mean, you can't blame people for doing research when nothing is coming out from the official channels. And what does come out is very suspect and very suspicious and doesn't seem to tell the whole story. And, And you've got, there's so many aspects of this, because you're right. It's like, okay, do we talk about the Dairy Queen picture? Do we talk about...
miles away? Like, he just decided to drive, you know what I mean? So there's the Dairy Queen picture, but then there's also the gas station where apparently he drove 30 miles away from this thing to get gas and then drove back and then turned himself into his parents.
And so, and even that, I don't know if we've gotten the official story, because it's like, what I understood happened was that the kid admitted what he did and the dad sort of got a neighbor together and they turned him in. But then apparently the guy never confessed. Tyler Robinson, as far as I know, has not confessed, and he is claiming he's innocent. So it's all mixed up. It's all jumbled.
Not only that, the trans lover or whatever, dude, we still know nothing about that person. And by the way, now they've gone missing. I don't know if you saw that, that article that came out, but apparently the trans lover is like missing now. Like nobody knows where they went. They just disappeared off the face of the earth.
Yeah. I've got the New York Post article right here. Location of Tyler Robinson's lover still undisclosed as family lay low months after Charlie Kirk shooting. The transgender lover of Charlie Kirk's alleged killer has seemingly vanished from his hometown 6 weeks after the political assassination that shook the country. Again, I think, again, the only sizable amount of information I've seen contributing to the idea that Lance Twiggs and Tyler Robinson were involved were from this leak to a YouTuber named Turkey Tom. And you know, he does seem to show that, like, there was... I would be very, very uncertain about letting this guy go, basically, is what I'm saying. It seemed like if Tyler Robinson is the shooter, Lance Twiggs almost certainly knew about it, was involved in it, at least contributed to the motive behind it. That's if this guy's the shooter. But let's talk about this story, because this is the big story from today, and I really want to get into this. Cash Patel shuts down Charlie Kirk foreign influence probe in explosive feud with Trump's counterterror chief. This is from Daily Mail. They say FBI Director Cash Patel crushed efforts by Tulsi Gabbard's closest advisor to see if a foreign power was involved in Charlie Kirk's assassination. The head of the National Counterterrorism Center, Joe Kent, friend of the show, analyzed FBI files to determine whether Kirk's alleged killer received assistance from a foreign power. So he was investigating whether, foreign countries had any involvement in this. Apparently that investigation alarmed Patel, who believed the counterterrorism chief was overstepping by interfering with an ongoing FBI investigation, and they shut it down. They apparently had this meeting in the White House where they ended up all but yelling at each other over this. Again, this is weird. Like, this is very weird. Why is he shutting down this investigation?
Right? Because, like, why would you do that? Right? Like, I'll tell you this. He's the one that just called us a bunch of conspiracy theorists, even though, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know how many podcasts I listened to that guy on where he was talking about conspiracy theories and was talking about draining the swamp and, you know, getting, but that's neither here nor there. Let's just go to the point where, so if you want to convince somebody that the official narrative is the truth and that there's nothing actually additional going on, nothing more nefarious going on, well, you don't pave over the area where the person was assassinated the next day.
Right.
You don't put sweeping gag orders on every law enforcement, every major media personality that had a connection to him.
Every potential witness, right?
Witness out of the 3,000 person crowd. And then you request that there's no cameras in the courtroom. Right. You don't do those three things if you want to prove to somebody that there's nothing weird going on. You know what I mean? And, to your point of this foreign probe, like, well, it makes sense that that's coming out right now, Harrison, because the truth is, even though everybody, you know, is probably freaking tired of this, all roads with this kind of lead back to a foreign influence being involved in this, whether it was Tyler Robinson and he was, you know, used as a patsy or whatever. I mean, all roads lead back to that, because so many of the things that happened prior to this. When I consider events like this, I always look at who stands to gain, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, it comes down to money. It comes down to money. It comes down to power, control, whatever. But I think money is probably the main motivator for a lot of these things. People do some pretty evil things for money, especially when religion is involved. And we can get into that if you want. But, you know, so many things leading up to this event, the people that stood to gain the most were the people that were being that had the most potential of being hurt by Charlie Kirk and the way that he was starting to turn as far as his ideology was moving. Because I don't think people realize this. Charlie Kirk was You know, I like how you said in the beginning that you did not appreciate him enough. I'm the same way. I picked at him a lot. I didn't like the fact that he was such a Zionist apologist. I didn't like the fact that he was so, you know, just kind of that way. But I appreciated everything else he did. And towards the end, like everybody else, like many other people, I started to recognize that, okay, wait a second, he's figuring things out. Like he understands what's going on. He's kind of towing the line. And I actually said this in one of my first streams. And it was after the Josh Hammer and Dave Smith debate that he hosted at Turning Point. And I literally said, it's going to be really interesting to see if something happens to him after this debate, because it took stones to put this together and put it on this main stage. Because, you know, Charlie Kirk was one of the most influential individuals of, in, I believe, in modern history, but especially when it came to the younger generations. Yeah. You know, you're talking the, what is it? Gen X? What is the generation right? I'm 38. Generation right underneath me. Was that X, right?
Well, millennial and then Gen Z.
Z. So you have Gen Z, and then what would high schoolers be? Is that like Alpha or something like that?
I don't even know.
But anyway, those two generations. Okay, so consider this. This is a lot to unpack, but it's the reality. For decades, there has been a very strong propaganda war going on in this country, with many people not even understanding that it's happening. And it has been all based on garnering support for a certain country and their actions that they're taking. I think I can say it on here, can I? I don't have to censor myself.
Oh, it's Israel. It's 100% Israel. Yeah,
it's Israel.
For sure.
So Hasbara, right? Hasbara's been going on for decades. And they successfully propagandized all of the boomer generation. Like, to the point where they believed exactly how they needed to believe, and they fell right in line. The younger generation did not. That's why you're getting the pushback that you are, right? That's why the ramp up of the Hasbara campaign with influencers, they're pivoting. They're starting to learn, okay, wait a second. We're losing the propaganda war, like Netanyahu said. So now we have to use influencers. Now we have to use podcasts, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Charlie Kirk was the face, realistically, of the most important and valuable generation to that propaganda war.
Yep.
And not only that, he was about to tap into the next generation, because he was about to do thousands of high school chapters. And so what do you think happens when he abandons the Israel cause because of the text message that Candace Owens dropped, right? Saying I'm forced to abandon the Israel cause because of the donors and the pressure and all the manipulation and everything, right? And all the other things he was talking about, obviously, because he had figured things out. What do you think happens when all of a sudden now he's the face of this, and he's going to campuses, and he's influencing the two most valuable generations to this propaganda war? There's no way that can happen. It's not going to happen. And so that's who Charlie was. And when I look at who stood to gain the most from him not being there anymore, you know, I'm not saying I know, but
it certainly, you know, and that's, you know, people say there's no evidence for Israel killing him. There's no physical evidence, perhaps, but I wouldn't expect there to be anyway. But that's not the only type of evidence. There's circumstantial evidence, of which there is plenty. So I don't think it's outrageous or absurd to say that. You know, like I've said the whole time, my tweet that I put out saying that Charlie Kirk was afraid, you know, he was going to be killed, which apparently there's a lot of other people that can back me up that that's how he felt. It doesn't, you know, if a wife says she's scared of her husband and then she gets murdered, that doesn't mean the husband murdered her. That's not a guilty, you know, decision right there, but it's a good place to start. But it's certainly a piece of evidence that will be added to the pile once all the investigation is done. So we got to go to a break here. We'll be right back. My guest is Ian Wendt. You can follow him on X at IWENDTSTER. We'll be right back on the other side, talk more about this weird development with Cash Patel and Joe Pence getting into a fight in the White House over foreign influence in the Charlie Kirk murder.
What out there could have an effect like methylene blue and synergistically work with it to boost it and supercharge it? So I got with Bigley. They've been making supplements long before I got with them. And I got with Chase, who's really smart. And I said, I want you to go to a couple of different formulators and ask them what you think's the best. Announcing, ladies and gentlemen, Ultra Methylene Red. Now, this bottle is three times the size of an Ultra Methylene Blue bottle, because it's to have the formula, you got to have a lot more stuff in it. But this, ladies and gentlemen, is amazing. And it just came in yesterday. I took it with the Methylene Blue. Incredible workout today. clarity, focus. It is so amazing. And it works with methylene blue, and it works without it. And unlike L4-methylene blue that you can't take if you're on a serotonin reuptake inhibitor or certain medications, nothing in this has any of those counterindications, but still consult your physician. But when you take it with ultramethylene blue, it just does synergistic things that are amazing. I mean, I had this idea like a month into methylene blue exploding. I said, we got to come out with something that's complementary or even better. This is the research from that. You can buy three bottles, get 25% off. Buy two bottles, get 20% off. Buy one bottle, get 15% off. And when you subscribe and you cancel any time, it locks it in at 50% off at thealexjonesstore.com. So here it is, ladies and gentlemen. And it's available right now exclusively, limited first run. A little more comes in a month, but they got a limited run. Chase, tell us about what is in Ultra Methylene Red.
Well, I got to tell you, I've never been prouder of a product launch than I am of this. I really had a heavy hand in this.
So we are officially the first company through the Alex Jones Store that's ever even invented or launched something like this called Methylene Red. So I'm incredibly proud. And so we put this together as both a methylene blue super enhancer, especially with the cognitive focus benefits, the mitochondria empowerment, and the brain dropping off an extra electron for the brain cells. But it's also an incredible standalone product. I mean, just to give you an example, Alex, one of our best sellers when we were still operating the InfoWars store was Ultra 12. And this has everything that Ultra 12 had in it. 206,000% your daily value of vitamin B12 through methylcobalamin. So this is all backed by studies, by the way. We looked very carefully into this. The P5P, form of B6 that cranks out GABA, serotonin, and dopamine like a neurotransmitter factory. It's got 5,000 micrograms of neurological B12 that regrows damaged nerve cells and shields your memory from the brain drain agenda from the globalists. It's got 5 grams of TMG, a methyl donor juggernaut that recycles homocysteine, fueling DNA repair and detoxifying your brain. It's got acetyl L-carnitine in it. It's a brain-penetrating carnitine that floods your mitochondria with ATP, which is basically energy and reverses cognitive aging. It's got uridine monophosphate in it, the synaptogenesis rocket fuel that grows new dendritic spines and locks in razor-sharp memory, and just so much more. It's even got the CoQ10 in it, of course, which is huge, huge product that we've sold in different forms in the past. But this is the most impressive compilation of ingredients that I've ever seen in a supplement. I'm very proud that we launched it. I'm very proud that it's our second tincture on the market. And when I'm looking through these studies, I mean, here are the benefits that are listed: migraine prevention, cardiovascular health, antioxidant, cellular protection. We've got neurotransmitter synthesis and mood helps people with depression, according to these studies that I've looked at here. Even energy and fatigue reduction, more cardio production, cognitive support, mood cognition, endothelial function. I mean, it goes on and on. Nerve regeneration, cognitive and mood support.
So that's what you're getting with us, Ultramethylene Red. Everything we sell is the most insanely powerful, best thing we can come up with, because this is what we take, and it's common sense to want to sell somebody something that really works. So that's why everybody just raves and raves and raves about the products at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, folks. This is The War Room. We're talking with Ian Wendt. You can follow him on X at IWENDTSTER, or he's on YouTube at The Ian Wendt Show. That's WENDT, and officialpatriotgear.com, officialpatriotgear.com. So, again, we're talking about the Charlie Kirk murder and the ensuing investigation. Talk to us a little bit about, well, let's stick on this for now, because I do want to get into the Google searches, because I think that is a very fascinating development that just happened recently. But sticking with the big story today of Kash Patel and Joe Kent apparently going head-to-head about this, the excuse that was given rings utterly false to me. Tell me if you agree, Ian. They say the Trump administration officials were worried that Kent's probe into foreign interference could provide ammunition to Robinson's defense lawyers, who could then argue more than one suspect was involved in Kirk's murder. I mean, that is ridiculous to me. I mean, first of all, there's the Brady laws. You know, you get a Brady violation, they have to provide any exculpatory evidence to the defense. You can't just not do the investigation in order to not provide the evidence. And if a foreign country is involved and that's something that the defense wants to bring up, they don't need the FBI to do the research for him. They got the guy right there. Like, if he's involved in a foreign, with a foreign power, then he could just tell them. They don't need the FBI to do that research. Just nothing about this excuse makes sense. And if they're lying, then there's a reason they're lying. They're trying to cover, there's a different reason that's motivating them, because this doesn't make any sense to me. Ian, what do you think?
Dude, I couldn't agree more. I think it's such a deflection. Like, it just seems like every single time something like this happens, the most ridiculous excuse is used. Yeah. And we're just supposed to gobble it up and be like, yeah, okay, that sounds plausible. Like,
right.
I can't understand if these people think that we are really that stupid, or if they are just that stupid. Like, that does not sit well with me. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't seem like a plausible, it just seems like bullcrap.
Yeah.
Like, just straight up. It stinks to high heaven.
Yeah.
It doesn't land.
I can't help but agree. And it seems like the response that we're getting when we question this stuff is like Cash Tell being like, guys, it's me. And it's like, okay, so what? Like,
seriously,
I mean, really, though,
because it's like, okay, sweet. Thanks, Cash. So far, you've proven that there's gambling in the NBA. Sick. Thanks, bro. We appreciate that. That's sick. But like, how about the Epstein files?
Seriously, how about the Epstein files? How about we get some information about the Charlie Kirk murder?
I just think that, I don't know, you know, I'm no expert, but I just feel like this has been gone. If let's just say for a second that there is no real crazy conspiracy theory and this is actually the official narrative, and if that's the case, man, these guys just suck at the delivery. Like,
yes.
So, like, as bad as you can possibly suck at delivering a message.
Well, here.
And, you know.
Yeah. So I'm sorry to cut you off, but I completely agree.
No,
and like a great example of this is the video that they show where if you extend it 10 seconds earlier, we could see the shot. So it's stuff like that it's like, okay, if you're saying you have all this footage, just show us the footage. It doesn't make any sense to me that you have to withhold it for the trial. Like, why would that be the case? If they have the footage, they should be able to show with all the cameras there, they should be able to put out a 10-minute video that goes, here he is walking, here he is getting the gun out, here he is firing the gun. Everything that happened is under the purview of a camera. Release the footage and all of us will shut up. If you have the footage, we'll watch it. You know, we're just looking for the truth. They want us to shut up. They have the ability to shut us up if they present the evidence, but they're not presenting the evidence, so we're not going to shut up. It's like, this is not hard to understand, but man, are they bad at conveying what they want, you know, us to think. I don't even know what they expect us to believe at this point.
Yeah, well, and on top of that, I don't know if you saw this, but also, I think his name is Ryan or something like that. Someone got the clearest video footage out of everybody, from his, I believe it was his 3 o'clock or his 4 o'clock, Charlie's 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock. I think it was his 3 o'clock. It was Charlie's 3 o'clock. And, it's super clear HD footage, super slow motion. And he has actually been going all over. I guess he started on TikTok and got banned from TikTok and now he's on Twitter. But according to him, and again, I don't know him, so I don't know if this is for sure true or anything, but he made videos and he straight up said, listen, the FBI called me and told me that because this was so traumatizing that I should delete the footage off my phone because it's probably best. Otherwise I might get PTSD or something like that. And then on top of that, on top of telling him he should probably just delete it off his phone, they called him back to verify that it was deleted off his phone. And instead of doing that, he posted it online. But it's like, again, if you want to prove to somebody that something nefarious is not going on and that your official narrative that is actually the truth, you don't call an eyewitness and tell them to delete the footage off their phone and destroy the evidence ultimately and then verify that it's been done.
That is super creepy. I had not heard about that. Yeah, and just add it to the list of just like inexplicable things that have occurred in this case. And so there's a couple like key components I think people have big questions about. And I just want to know your take on it. Method of execution. Was it a 30-06? Because that doesn't seem to make any sense.
No.
That's one a lot of people have a hard time with. To me, it's the caliber is my only issue. I believe that the guy shot from a rooftop. Every video I've seen shows people looking in that direction as soon as the shot goes off. That makes sense to me. But the caliber of the bullet not having an exit wound doesn't make any sense. You could have a, projectile with a, you know, a bullet with a smaller projectile inside a .30-06, but what's your take on that? What's your take on some of the alternative death methods, the exploding lavalier mic or things like that?
Yeah. So first, let me just say, I am definitely no expert when it comes to ballistics, but I do have a lot of friends who are. And from everyone that I've talked to and everybody that I've heard and even all the videos that I've watched of other ballistic experts, every single person can agree that it is not a .30-06, because if it was a .30-06, it would have blown his head off. Like,
literally,
there's it's such a massive caliber, and there's no way that that is what actually took him out. As far as the other stuff goes, the lavalier mic theory to me, I haven't completely written it off, but I will tell you that I am more on the side of it not being that. And these are my only reasons why. I wear a mic a lot, right? I wear one of those clip-on mics quite a bit. And if you're putting a mic on, you know this too. If you put a mic on, you're not putting it on diagonally. You're putting it on straight up, right? So for me, the first thing is the trajectory doesn't make sense. It would have popped this way instead of that way. The other thing is, if I had it on right now and I just went like this with my shirt, that sucker would go flying to the moon. And from what I can see in that video, the mic did not come off his shirt. Mm. And that's another big sign to me that's like, man, if there was a projectile in there or if it was an explosive or something like that, that thing should have been long gone.
Right.
And so that theory to me is kind of, I don't know, I'm not totally sold on that one yet. The one that I feel like is probably the most plausible that I've seen is that he actually got shot from his 5 o'clock up this way, and that it was that it entered here under his ear and came out his neck, and this was an exit wound.
Yeah.
That is like the most plausible, the theory that makes the most sense to me. But I will also say that the video that I was talking about that this kid just released, that supposedly the FBI called him and told him to delete, the footage is very, very clear, and it's really hard to see if there's an actual entry point. That's the tough part about this. So, man, I don't know. What I know is that it wasn't a .30-06.
And I think most people would agree with you, and I'm no expert either. But that's sort of an unclosed door for me, right? Because we're not sure about that. They say that, Tyler Robinson then, you know, leaves and plants the gun and then picks the gun back up. In the meantime, he's texting my love and filling in all of the gaps of the official story for him. Again, a little bit suspicious. But then so what's the timeline with the Dairy Queen and the gas station? So what's your working theory right now? If Tyler Robinson was the guy, how would the Dairy Queen visit and the gas station visit fit into the timeline of him being the shooter?
Dude, I'll be honest. This one to me is like Twilight Zone. When I heard that he was spotted at Dairy Queen, and then I heard that he went to a gas station that was like 30 miles away for absolutely no reason, apparently, and just kind of like is showing up on these cams. That to me is Twilight Zone. I honestly don't know what to think of that. The only thing that I can come up with is that if he was truly the shooter, he was just completely like delirious and just, I don't know.
Disassociated or something?
Yeah, maybe, dude. Like that one does not make sense to me at all. And I've heard every theory about it, and I don't think anybody can really make sense of that one. It just,
and he's in the different clothes.
He was hungry and he needed gas. Like,
and again, he's in the different clothes, so he's not wearing the same thing as the guy in the footage. That doesn't make a lot of sense. How he turns himself in?
Maybe he went somewhere where he felt like it would be easier to blend in, you know, the last place they would ever check, you know, I mean, a Dairy Queen is the last place that I would check for an assassin. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I guess I'm,
or a gas station. I mean, I don't know.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's so far away and it doesn't really fit in the official timeline. So that's very suspicious. And then didn't they like demolish the Dairy Queen? Like that's one of those things where it's like, that doesn't even if, you know, he was a patsy and he got caught. Like, why demolish the building? Why pave over the crime scene? It's like, what? Even if everything you're telling us is legit, these actions make no sense.
That's the thing about this. That's why I'm telling you that for me, it's going to be very, very, very hard for someone to convince me that the official narrative is the truth. Because again, it's like I said in the beginning, if one of the things made sense, like if there was like one piece that was like, okay, yeah, that's pretty plausible, then I'd be like, all right, like, let's move from
build
there.
Build off that, yeah.
But nothing makes sense. None of it. Not one piece of it. Not the beginning, not the end. And, you know, you were even talking about the rifle assembly and stuff. One of my buddies, Ricky, I don't know if you saw this video. Joe Rogan showed it on his show, I think. He literally
It takes a while.
And he wasn't under duress. He even talks about this. He's like, I wasn't under duress. I wasn't, super anxious. I wasn't like, my blood wasn't freaking pumping, you know, like crazy. And my adrenaline wasn't going like insanely. And it still took him, I think, like 3 or 4 minutes to do it with 3 different tools. According to the official narrative, there was a screwdriver on the roof and that's what he did it with. And it's like, no, he didn't. That's not how that works.
Yeah, you know, so many aspects of this are just like, what? Like, why even tell us that? Nobody's going to believe that. Like, on the face of it, it's absurd. So,
exactly. And like, just shut up. If anything, right. Don't say anything. You know what I mean? Like,
it would literally be better. Yeah. Yeah. And there's so much to this. I mean, people have made hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of videos about this. And it seems like everything sort of spirals out. You get these characters that show up. That people start looking into, and it's like, well, wait, was this guy a random bystander, or why does his family own all of these houses on this block? Like, there's so many angles to this. One of the latest ones are these Google searches. So very simply explained, you can use the Google Trends function to find out who is searching what where, basically. And so you can get you can get heat maps and frequency maps that show who's searching what where. And so you have these, basically everybody involved in the assassination, from the assassin to the surgeon to the lawyer defending the...
All of them have been searched.
They'd all been searched a month or so before the assassination, specifically from Washington, D.C., Huntsville, Alabama, and Israel. Huntsville, Alabama has a giant FBI headquarters. So it's like somebody was searching these names, not anytime in the 3 years previous to that. These names never got searched. They're like, you know, distinctive names. It's not like, you know, Bill Smith and everybody searching Bill, you know, somebody searching Bill Smith once a day. No, these are like specific names. Tyler Robinson searched from Israel and DC in July before Charlie's assassinated. What else has been discovered about this? And yeah, here's the guy that does it at Real Baron Podcast, at Real Baron Podcast. So yeah, shout out to at Real Baron Podcast and at Based Sam Parker and at Sam Parker for Senate. These guys have been doing a ton of great work on this. We don't want to take credit for the effort they put in. Explain about these Google searches and what you think they mean.
So again, it's one of those things where it's like same thing with the ballistics, right? Like, I'm definitely no SEO expert, but what this is showing is that obviously somebody was searching for all these people. And we're not just talking about Tyler Robinson. We are talking about the exact hospital where he was brought. We're talking about the medical examiner. By the way, this is the same medical examiner that said that the bullet was lodged in his body and that it was a miracle bullet because it didn't kill anybody behind him. And they came out with this whole story of the Man of Steel. And then Andrew Colvett ran with it. Okay, that was another thing for me that was like, what? No. Like, there's some, it was another one of those circumstances where I felt like they were using religion and faith to kind of distract everybody from actually looking into it, being just, you know, no. Understand that this was an act of God. This was a miracle. And let's get everybody riled up in their faith so that they're not paying attention and not asking the questions, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like that happens all the time. And this was another circumstance for that. But the medical examiner was the one that said that. Then they searched for every single surgeon, every one of them in that hospital. And it all happened in the months leading up to his assassination, specifically around the times when Charlie was getting pretty loud about Israel and pretty loud about other things. As a matter of fact, I believe it was the 15th or the 16th that Charlie did an episode on his show where he basically held the Trump administration's face to the fire and said, listen, you're losing the base. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because of the Epstein files. Right. And so here's the 10-step plan that I've laid out that is necessary for you guys to follow in order to get the base back. And he literally laid out every single step. And there were a lot of things in there that I can imagine if the administration saw and heard, they were like, oh, this isn't cool.
Right.
And not only that, Charlie also was, from what I've heard, he was like one of the main people that was telling Trump not to bomb Iran.
Right.
And then Trump got pissed at him apparently about that as well. And that's just one piece, but it was also right around the time that he did that debate. It was like 3 or 4 days that the searches for the hospital started after he did that debate at Turning Point with Dave Smith and Josh Hammer. And again, it was all these people, and these searches kept on popping up so weirdly in Washington, D.C. mainly, and Israel mainly, and then, like you said, in Texas.
Huntsville, Alabama, I think it was.
Or Alabama, excuse me. Yeah, Alabama.
No, it's very weird. And I personally can't think of an innocent reason why all of these names in particular would be searched from these places in particular. It's not like, oh, they were searched in Madagascar and Russia and Israel. It's like, no, these things were only searched in Israel, only searched in D.C. Again, these are all just, you know, if you're piling up chips on one side of the border or the other, you know, the side of suspicion has way more chips right now than the side of we've got the right guy and everything's under control. And, you know, early on, one of the first things that anybody said about the assassination, John Solomon, who has fantastic sources and is broken major stories, he mentioned foreign elements being involved, foreign intelligence providing information. And of course, the potential assassin of Trump that was caught apparently had, you know, foreign connections and foreign apps on his phone. The other guy at the golf course was like a recruiter for Ukraine, had a ton of Ukraine connections. So the idea that there could be foreign influence around an assassination is by no means an absurd thing to claim. And yet, you know, Joe Kent is looking into this and the FBI is shutting him down doing it. I can't see a innocent reason for that to happen either. There's just so much about this that screams suspicion. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who kills him because of this assassination. The methods and manipulation tactics of the Israel lobby have been put on full display. And I think that's extremely valuable for people that want to know how influence campaigns are carried out, how pressure and coercion is carried out on high level political targets. We're seeing into the belly of the beast. We're seeing how the sausage is made. We're seeing the text messages trying to pressure Charlie into doing one thing or another. We see how they offer money first and then threats. And I mean, it's fascinating to see this influence operation at work.
And listen, that to me, that text thread to me was like the number one thing that really kicked everything off, I feel like, for people when Candace dropped that text thread. And I'll explain why. Let me first say this though. I really want to get a hold of one of my friends that's like a real SEO expert and ask him if is there any possibility that there's some kind of like bug or something and things are showing up weirdly and there's some kind of weird anomaly going on? You know, I would like to look into that because that's the only thing I can imagine.
Well, I know
potentially explaining.
I know the guy who did it, Baron, because I watched some of his videos. He talked to somebody about that, and basically he talked to somebody at Google, and he basically said not every search will show up, but if a search shows up, it's because somebody searched it. So, you know, if you go on Google and search something, it won't necessarily get included in trends. Most do, but not all of them. But if it shows up in trends, it was definitely searched. So as far as I know, those are valid results.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. So what I'll say, though, about the text thread is this. The text thread specifically – And again, I am not accusing anybody. I don't know exactly what happened. Like we are just asking the questions, trying to get to the bottom of this. But this to me was one of the most telltale things out of everything that happened, because you have Andrew Colvett, who right after Charlie died is talking about how he was still pro-Israel. He also talked, they were all talking about how Charlie and Candace didn't really have a relationship, how Candace was kind of estranged from Turning Point and wasn't really involved anymore. And he also even specifically said that the donors they were losing were not Israeli donors. He literally said that on a podcast. This is just like within the week of Charlie being murdered. You also had Josh Hammer do a podcast episode where he not only promoted his book, but he also talked about how Charlie was such a advocate for Israel. You also had Pastor Rob talk about how he was such an advocate for Israel. And
Benjamin
also
Netanyahu.
He even And Netanyahu. Pastor Rob, though, even said that Charlie said that he wanted him to do a mission in Israel. This all happened like within a week after Charlie died. And then Candace drops that text thread. And just look at the text. It proved that all of that was either lies or complete ignorance for their own selfish gain. Because it's like, okay, he obviously speaks outwardly about the opposition and like the pressure that's coming down and the lost Israeli donors, right? So that's the first lie, is that the donors weren't Israeli. The next one is he's going to leave the Israel cause. So that's the next big lie, is that he was obviously turning against the Israel cause. He was definitely not pro-Israel when he was killed. That is a guaranteed fact, because this text thread was one day before he was killed.
Right.
And Josh Hammer was in that text thread. And Pastor Rob was in that text thread. And Andrew Colvett was in that text thread.
Yes, yeah, so they can't claim ignorance. I mean, they were in the text thread. So, you know,
that's what I'm saying.
It doesn't necessarily prove they killed him, but it proves they lied about, you know, his influence. Yeah.
That's right. And then also the Candace Owens thing. He literally says, I'm going to bring Candace on, because they're talking about how he's being pressured to cancel Tucker, right? And so he says, I'm going to bring Candace on to piss them all off. And everybody that knew, anybody that watched Charlie from, like, you know, even from afar, you knew that Charlie and Candace Owens were super tight. They were like best friends. And so that was an obvious lie. But then the part about her not being part of Turning Point was also a massive lie. She was still on the site as the leader of Blexit. Not only that, she spoke at a women's conference for Turning Point, I think like 6 months prior to that. She went on tour with them the summer prior. And so all of these things were revealed in that one text thread. And that for me was like, okay, those are all lies. Yeah. And so now I want an explanation. Why is the pastor lying about that? When he's the founder of Turning Point Faith.
Right.
So a lot of those donations, I can only imagine, are going to Turning Point Faith. No. And then right after that, man, it's just, there's so many things. But then right after that, every single one of them are going on these podcast campaigns to prove their innocence.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm like, listen, even if someone was murdered that was close to me, even if people started saying that they thought it was me, I know it wasn't me. Like, I know I'm innocent. And so, but I also know that I want to know what, how, why, and who, right? And so if all of these people that are accusing me, even though they're accusing me, if they're all trying to get to the bottom of those questions and I can't do it myself, what would I do? I would sit back, take all the hits. Who cares? I'm innocent. I don't need to worry about that. But I'm going to let them do their thing. I'm not going to go on this massive campaign to try and prove my innocence. Because look, I know I'm innocent.
It's very suspicious, and just like everything else about this, it's very suspicious. Thank you for coming on, Ian. Ian Wint at iWinster on X, YouTube, The Ian Wint Show, official patriotgear.com. Thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully we'll get answers one day.
Bro. Thanks.
So far I'm not satisfied, and I don't think you should be either. We need justice for Charlie Kirk. Thanks for being with us.
I just wanted to plug the Methylene Blue. I'm a new supplement buyer from Alex Jones Store, and I keep hearing people talking about the Methylene Blue, and I'm like, you know what? I don't know what the hype is all about, but I definitely want to try it. And what I noticed is I didn't get the sensation that a lot of the other people said that they got, you know, like the tingling fingers and like this, you know, euphoria. But I do have an ample amount of energy, and I'm disabled, so I'm a housewife, and whenever you're at home, day in and day out, 7 days a week, it really tends to drag after some time. And there were things that I wasn't doing around the house that I should have. But now I'm getting things done like really quick. I have all this extra time on my hands now. And I really think it's the Methylene Blue that's been giving me the energy. And it's so funny because now like my silly husband's calling me a meth head, which is hilarious. But yeah, so I'm going to stick on that. And I actually have some bovine coming in today, so I can't wait to try that out. I'm also going to give that to my dog because, you know, it's a lot of help too. And I brought online that's really good for your dog if you give them, like, a small little amount of the food. So I'm going to do that. But, yeah, I just thought I would tell you guys about my experiences so far. So,
well, Jen, thank you. That's amazing to hear, and we love to hear that, honestly. I mean, that's the reason why Alex has created the shop, so people can get – you know, get healthier, not be relying on big pharmaceutical companies, but instead take control of their health. So that's good to hear. You know, I fluctuated weight-wise too. And so finding something that works is really important. And not to get hooked on those, like, high caffeine, insane chemicals, energy drinks, what so much of us have relied on over the years. I literally was getting anxiety from one of them. And so I too am on the blue these days. So I guess your husband would call me a meth head, but, it's good to hear from you, Jen. I love it. I think it's great. And I love to hear from you as well.